you so much for checking out The Core on the Envision Radio Network, copyright 2014.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now,
this is Night Call, Detroit's longest running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 248-544-WRIF. That's 248-544-9743. Or text the RIF at 4WRIF. That's 4974. Night Call is on the air. Here are your hosts, Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the broadcast. Hey, give us a call. 248-544-WRIF.
That's 248-544-9743.
Amazing things happening in the world, and really big one right here in Michigan. I'm going to delay this a second, but first I want to just...
Are you going to put a stay on it?
I'm going to put a stay on it, yeah. The headline in today's Sunday Detroit Free Press, History on Hold, Appeals Court Issues Stay on Gay Marriage. I think most people know, at least here in Michigan, that the ban on gay marriage has been...
The
constitutional ban has been declared unconstitutional by federal judge Bernard Friedman. Must have been some liberal. Actually, he was appointed by Ronald Reagan.
Surprise.
And but the district court issued a stay of the law, so it's not going to come into effect right away. Or
well,
put it the other way around.
Yeah, at least until Wednesday. They can't perform any more marriages. Saturday, it was boom business.
About somewhere,
hundreds of
we've heard
couples.
All sorts of reports,
yeah.
100, 300, 700,
yeah.
And always like on the cover of the Free Press. And you can tell you're from Michigan. If you're not from Michigan, you say the Free Press.
Right.
We here in Detroit, we say the Detroit Free Press, right?
We do.
And here's this couple in Lansing and being married by Ingham County Clerk Barb Bynum. And, you know, a lot of these county clerks came and came in on Saturday and had
yes.
their people come in on Saturday.
They sure
to
did.
Do it. And it's Michigan's first gay marriage between Lansing residents Glenna DeJong and Marcia Casper, 53 and 52. And... will their marriage be legal? I don't know.
Yet to be seen. I mean, look at California, which is a pretty liberal state. What happened there, you know? It went on for a while, and
yeah.
all these people got married, and then they weren't.
Same thing in Utah. But that's not unusual. In fact, what is unusual is that federal district judge Friedman actually didn't issue a stay of his own ruling, because what's trying to be accomplished here is to get some final federal Supreme Court decision that these laws barring loving couples from being married is decidedly unconstitutional, because it doesn't provide equal protection under the law. But look, I wanted to just say, I wanted to hold that for a second to talk about a couple of other things. Just, well, what do we say? Business, right? First off, you can join us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/nightcall. My website is Peter Werby. How do you spell that?
That's W-E-R-B-E.
.com, yeah. And we'd like to get your emails at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. There was a wonderful event that I was at last night, and actually had the privilege of being on stage out at the Premier Center in Chesterfield.
New York.
Not the Premier Center?
No. You got to be more specific.
Okay. But this is this venue that holds about 700 people. Doug Podell, who was the afternoon guy or the midday guy here at WRIF, now works on our sister station WCSX, and a longtime rocker. They call him the Doc of Rock.
Yeah.
He put together a benefit for the family of recently passed away, Gary Grimshaw, the great poster artist whose career went way back into the 1960s, these iconic posters from the old Grandy Ballroom. And Gary was, he was working in the genre up in just a little bit before he died, just not so long ago. The place holds 700 people, and there must have been a couple hundred more than that, I'll tell you. Great bands played. And I don't know why we call them local bands. SRC, Scott Richard, who had been sick himself, and had a big benefit put on by the rock community in Detroit.
They are local bands.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
So. Yeah, there's local and there's national, and the difference historically has just been some are signed and tour nationally and around
sure.
the world. And
Gary Quackenbush played his band, and also Dick Wagner of the Frost, and who was the music director for Lou Reed and for Alice Cooper.
Now, he's more of a national act.
He's a national,
yeah.
But he's right here in Detroit.
Yeah.
He's right here in Detroit. So, and people turned out, and plus there was all this memorabilia that Doug Podell put together that was auctioned off that brought in just thousands. I mean, he had all these rockers, signed guitars, and posters.
I know, he worked really, really hard. Seeger donated some stuff.
Right.
Our best friend Ted Nugent donated.
A guitar. Right. They didn't tell Ted I was going to be there. But Doug and I were up on stage. I was trying to get some photographs up on our Facebook page. We'll have to work on that. Get that going. All right, let's go to this historic event here in Michigan. Michigan shamed itself in 2004 by putting in the Constitution legalized discrimination that said marriage could only be between a man and a woman. Now, that's odd to say because up until just a little while ago, it was assumed that was the only, you know, you had to have one person of each gender, male, female. And yet when, I mean, talk about the emperor having no clothes. When someone said, well, what are the arguments against it?
Mm-hmm.
The people that were trying to marshal the arguments didn't do real well.
Right. And after this happened, you know, I didn't realize the ruling went down because I was extremely preoccupied on Thursday and Friday. And Friday, I was driving through downtown Ferndale, where the Affirmations Gay, Lesbian, Transgender Center by Transgender Center is, there were live vans from all of the news stations, and I'm like, okay, you know, what's going on in the Dale? I got to know. And I got home and flipped on the news and realized what had happened. I was elated. But then there was this pastor on there, or preacher, or I don't know what he was. But he was just railing against it. And I mean, I almost picked up the phone and called Channel 7, of which I'm a fan, and say, you know, get this guy off of it. It was awful. It's just the things he was saying.
Yeah,
was
I mean,
horrible.
you couldn't say that about another race or about another religion, but somehow
it is unnatural. And I'm thinking,
how can it be unnatural? People do it.
People are people. I don't care.
Organized religion has been trying to suppress homosexuality among men and women for ever since they got these formal monotheistic religions 4,000 years ago or so.
Yeah. They've done a pretty damn good job of it.
Well, just making people's lives miserable
right.
and pillaring them and murdering them and discriminating
and
against them.
And that still goes
on. We've actually gotten down to the U.S. in the last, say, 30 years that they were only discriminated against, except for some pretty prominent assaults that actually happen and still happen regularly. But here, Judge Friedman said the constitutional amendment known as the Michigan Marriage Act was passed by 2.7 million state voters in 2004. He wrote that it was unconstitutional because it denied gays and lesbians equal protection under the law. Now, one is welcome to have any religious view that they want.
Yeah.
And even try either in gentle persuasion terms or in those terms that you and I, Jalene, found so offensive. Whatever. It's free speech. It's freedom of religion to do it. But that is a religious institution that is all about, I don't know what, saving souls or bringing people close to whatever God figure a particular religion in a particular part of the world happens to believe in. But we're talking about the political state, a political state which ostensibly, I know the political state has an awful, like religion, has an awful history, to be sure, and is very, more frequently than not, oppressive. But ideally, with these revolutions, with these democratic revolutions that occurred in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries, was to protect people, was to guarantee equal standing in the political body to everyone. Now, of course, that didn't occur, and we've talked about this a lot. When the American Constitution came in, you had to be a white propertied male.
Yeah.
Right? White? Yeah, because black people were slaves, propertied, women didn't vote, and all of that. But this revolution, these democratic revolutions for the last few hundred years have been about inclusiveness, of stopping the exclusivity of making it live up to its promise.
Absolutely.
You know, all men are created equal. Men meaning everyone. And now we don't say. It would be all humans are created equal.
You women stay in the kitchen now.
Yeah, right. But so within a church, if you think it's against the natural law or the laws of God, good. Actually, not good. But don't make your beliefs, don't try to force the your beliefs through the political state on other people and make their lives miserable. And you can see the happiness, the joy, the celebration, the tears, the commitment when these laws are overturned. And on the other side, these people are going to hell and like that. I mean, come on.
Some people had signs peacefully protesting gay marriage. It's like, you know what? Go home.
Well, they had every right to do that. But why would they in some ways? Try to talk about raining on somebody's parade.
I think it's a little passive aggressive.
Well, you think? And then the Attorney General of Michigan, Bill Schuette, talk about a killjoy. He's the one that filed a request for a stay because his argument was that 2.7 million state voters in 2004 wanted this Michigan Marriage Act that would prohibit gay marriage. That would recognize marriage as only between a man and a woman. Attorneys for the state said they passed the amendment because they wanted to keep marriage only between a man and a woman. That was the voice of the people at the time, right? Kim, don't say that. I was going to say, so effing what?
I
would not want my rights up for a vote. Would you? I mean, maybe if you're a white propertied male,
right.
You might, but, as anybody else or anybody, period, how would you like to have your right of free speech up to a vote? He said, well, it would pass. Maybe. But first the people would say, well, what's he trying to say? And then if you had an unpopular view, they would say, let's take a vote. No, sorry.
That is a threat to me as a woman.
Sure.
And the right to choose what I want to do.
So here is what Judge Friedman wrote. Many Michigan residents have religious conviction whose principles govern the conduct of their daily lives. Wow, that was a Freudian slip.
It's a good one.
Yeah, the conduct of their daily lives and inform their own viewpoints about marriage, the judge wrote. Nonetheless, and here this is the important part, these views cannot strip other citizens of the guarantees of equal protection under the law. Who objects to that? Well, they knew, the homophobes knew they were on such shaky grounds, and they said, we got an idea. We will bring in one sociologist that said that children do best if they have a man and a woman as parents. Okay? This was rejected completely by this professor, the sociologist's own department at the University of Texas, and also the American Sociological Association. But let's say he's right. I mean, I know you don't like it when I argue like this.
It's okay.
Let's say that, in fact, that a child has a best chance to be a happy person and creative, fruitful, and all that. Everything we would like to see people. How much is it by? 200% or like maybe 1.5% or something like that.
Yeah.
And so what? I mean, what does that mean? I mean, all what we're talking about very frequently are gay couples adopting children.
Right.
And in the case of the two women, the two nurses that brought the case in Michigan, mm-hmm. they were adopting special needs kids.
I know.
How many of you would adopt a special needs kid?
Let alone like a special needs animal, for crying out loud. Think about it. Like, a lot of people won't adopt an animal if it's older or something like that. This is a human being with special needs that requires special assistance. It's much more of a challenge.
Oftentimes, too, that the gay couples will adopt minority kids that are in orphanages and whatever that aren't going to be adopted at all.
Right.
And sometimes, in the case of women, they have natural childbirth through artificial insemination. So they're doing that anyway. I mean, many of us know women partners that have children naturally born.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just a little turkey baster and boom, there you are.
I just love to say that. Well, anyway.
There's lots of methods my friends have told me about.
Turkey baster. But in any event, wouldn't this child do a lot better if he didn't think his parents were pariahs, if they didn't even have, that they did not have the full respect and tolerance of society? And where's the tolerance? So in other words, the best thing you can do if you think that gay marriage is against God's law or natural law or some of the other stuff they brought up here, don't do it. And maybe, you know.
Why don't you mind your own business?
Yeah, you know, what's that song from the 20s? Ain't nobody's business if I do. But if you think it is other people's business, you have every right to preach on the street, to preach in the church. But what you don't have the right to do, and this is increasingly affirmed, is to make the political state your instrument of your religious views. So religion does not belong in the public square, and whereas that has always been the attempt of right-wing religionists to have the state act out their religious beliefs as they interpret it. But on the other hand, of course, you have all these Christians, all these Jews, all these Muslims that say, yeah, gay marriage is okay. Right?
Yeah.
You have liberal churches, liberal mosques, liberal synagogues and what have you. And this is, where did it go? That headline from the Detroit Free Press, History on Hold. And this would be like, the flash, oh, man, that's perfect. What was it? 60 years ago, 1954, the Supreme Court held that separate but equal, which the facilities never were equal, segregation was unconstitutional. And all those people in the South, some of them in the North, our whole country's going to go down the drain, you know?
It's unreal.
I'm just waiting for them to go down the drain.
Yeah. Keep circling it.
yeah. So, let's see. What do I have written here? Oh, yeah. I don't even know why I give the voice to this guy. But Gary Glenn, president of the American Family Association of Michigan, and they co-authored that constitutional amendment that was just declared unconstitutional, which prohibited gay marriage. One Detroit lawyer in a black robe doesn't have legitimate constitutional or moral authority to overturn either natural law or a vote of 2.7 million Michigan voters. Now, I thought these conservatives were always saying this is not a democracy, this is a constitutional republic with checks and balances. Mm-hmm. It is the duty of the court to make these constitutional assessments. And I got to tell you, particularly when you have a conservative-dominated court the way we have now, they make decisions all the time that I don't agree with. I don't.
Right.
Jalene doesn't agree with, like the Citizens United that has allowed people like the Koch brothers to put in almost $500 million.
Endless amounts of money.
Yeah, literally endless. That was one of the most anti-democratic, horrible decisions in a long time. But that is the duty of the Supreme Court. And how they got in there, how these right-wing justices came to dominate the Supreme Court is by the popular vote, because a lot of people just stayed home, didn't vote. Because if everybody votes, the Democrats win hands down. So when, like, coming up, there's we were just talking, Jalene, before the broadcast. Nate Silver, the statistician who gets everything right about every...
He's amazing. He predicted Barack Obama being elected.
Yeah. And now he says that the Republicans have an equal chance of, or a 50-50, a good chance, I forgot exactly how he put it, it's not in front of me, of retaking the Senate, which would have a Republican Senate and House. And the reason that they have a good chance is because the people that turned out for Barack Obama aren't going to turn out this time. They never do. The Democrats tending to be more working class and poor and lower middle class. They go for the big elections, don't come out in the little ones, right?
The little ones matter too, folks.
Yeah.
Because in the end,
Well, what do you think about this ruling?
Big issues.
Well, I mean, I got more here. Court cases are being played out as gays and lesbian relationships gain more acceptance in the United States. 59% of Americans approve of same-sex relations. Relationship, that's up almost 20% in 13 years.
That's wonderful. Let's go. Yeah. Let's aim higher.
And you know, well, if you go like 18 to 35, it's even.
Yeah, it's higher. Like no big deal. I mean, like when I spend a lot of time down in Ferndale and I see people of same sex holding hands, I don't even blink an eye. I don't even think a thing.
I blink an eye.
I don't.
I do. I said, isn't that nice that we live in a community where people can do that and feel free to do it?
But you know, it's not. It's just.
I always notice it.
It does not faze me.
Well, it doesn't faze me. It phases me. It makes me feel good.
It makes me feel good, too. I'm like, you rock on. You be open. Be yourself.
Nearly 60% of American adults surveyed said they were in favor of adoption by gays and lesbians, while 33%, only 33% said they were opposed. And I wrote here in the margin, so what? Either way, rights are not guaranteed by a popular majority. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because that's why there's a constitution to protect people so you don't have mobs determining what rights you have. I wonder if there's anything in here. Just that the U.S. Appeals Court for the Sixth Circuit has issued a temporary stay on Michigan's gay marriage case until Wednesday, and that means that the plaintiffs, the gay couple that sued, has to come to court and say why there should not be an injunction granted, but I think they will grant an injunction so that Michigan gay marriages will be on hold. It'd be very unusual for them to say. Now, Dana Nessel, co-counsel for the two nurses, DeBoer and Rouse, somewhere in here is their first names. People are going to have to wait now. Unfortunately, every minute a couple waits to get married and adopt their children is another day that the family is left vulnerable. Get that? Yeah. Homophobes, the children are left vulnerable. It's disappointing that we have 83 counties in Michigan and only four of them made special attempts to allow people to marry on Saturday. Okay, so I don't know. I mean, I'm not even sure how to pose a question to you here. I mean, what other than...
I'm curious if people... I was actually surprised.
I wasn't.
Just because there's so much bigotry and hatred in government and outside of government that I just...
But the statistics are saying you were pessimistic. You were wrong on your... Isn't it nice to be wrong about something like that?
Yes, it is. Sure is.
And that a Reaganite judge...
Couldn't believe it.
...saw that.
Couldn't believe it.
As well. No, I knew right from the opening and from... I mean, reading about it, that the questions they asked... I mean, that they brought in this scurrilous professor whose studies about the children in gay marriages thoroughly discredited. I mean, he is so disgraced, it was astounding to me that they brought him there.
Yeah.
I mean, why didn't they just give up?
Well, that was like their last leg, their last hope.
Well, I guess.
And it didn't work.
No, not at all. Let's see. This is not showing everything very well on my screen. Oh, I know what I have to press that magic button. And we've got a minute or two. If you have some comments on this ruling that now that gay marriage is permissible, at least the one judge says, and it's got to be upheld by an appeals court. Well, it's got to be ruled on by an appeals court, and then very well may wind up in the Supreme Court. And again, I keep reading that headline in Sunday's Detroit Free Press. History on hold. And the implications of that is that history is on the side of marriage equality. And for a Supreme Court, even with these unbelievably far right-wing justices like Scalia and Thomas, sort of what calls mainstream justices, including the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice, they're going to say that it is unconstitutional, that it doesn't meet muster for equal protection under the law. And then...
So you're saying that there won't be gay marriage?
There will be gay marriage.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe I didn't say it clearly.
Okay.
History is on the side. The momentum is on the side of marriage equality.
Good.
And then we can get beyond this.
Yes. Can we evolve already? Evolve.
And start talking about the stuff that really affects us. This affects gay people. And this, you know, and if you have hatred in your heart, if you have a prejudice in your heart, this affects you personally in a negative way. But you know, it ain't nobody's business except the folks involved. And they just want the same rights to marriage and recognition as full citizens as you and I. And what possible reason? What
harm?
Yeah, where's the harm? We've asked that for years
now.
Never
did an answer.
Yeah, no one has. I forgot.
Well, we've had maybe one person.
Yeah, and I can't remember what it was even.
And wasn't it a religious thing?
Now, religious is okay. I think it's against God's law. Okay, thank you. Next call. I mean, what can you say? You know, I mean, in fact, you can call, you know, you can talk to some other religionists and they'll say, no, you know, God is merciful and charitable. And I mean, as long as you don't read the Old Testament.
Right.
Yeah, you know. God isn't wiping out any whole people because they messed with them or didn't follow. Okay, never
mind. Last week.
Yeah, let's go. All right, but let's try some calls. 248-544-WRIF. And Paul in Sterling Heights has an opinion. Let's get his. Hey, Paul, you're on the air. Welcome. Paul.
Hi, folks. Thanks for taking my call again.
Sure.
Look, in 2002, I was that political electrician at Ford. We've talked before.
You were what?
And I remember telling Jolene this when you weren't there. And the Republican, one of the guys I talked with, told me I could never vote for a Democrat because Democrats are for the gays, and the gays are coming to recruit my kids.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, those are the kind of, you know, exactly, and I see up here, Paul, that you've identified it perfectly, what they call a wedge issue, it's a wedge between people's sense of what's best for themselves and their family and their community, and then they get jacked around by these Republicans who really aren't, a lot of them really aren't even homophobes. You know, we know how many closeted and not so closeted Republicans there are, but they know if they can chip away at Democratic majorities by using things like abortion and guns and gays, they do it, right?
You stepped on my punchline, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You can repeat it. It's worth repeating. Go ahead.
Okay. So I told Mike, well, what did you do about it? And he said, what did I do about what? And I said, I've never been recruited by gays. What did you do about it?
Yeah.
And he had a very rude comment. Okay, 2004, the wedge issue is illegal immigrants. Well, I changed it to illegal aliens. And Mike tells me I can never vote for a Democrat because they're for illegal aliens. Okay? And I told Mike, you know, it's more dangerous. It's gay aliens because when they come and recruit your kids, they're going to take them to live with the Klingons and the rings of Uranus.
The rings of Uranus. I like your sense of humor.
All right, Paul. We got to go to a break, so thank you very much.
How's Mike doing these days?
Yeah. I think I already said goodbye.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Some open lines for you.
I like what they call him by name.
248-544-WRIF. Gay Republicans? Yes, this will knock you out, what a Michigan gay Republican said about this decision to overturn the ban on gay marriage. Right back.
Make your opinion heard. Call us at our new number, 248-544-WRIF. Peter and Jalene will return with more of your calls in just a moment. Night Call.
Geico presents Strange Savings Stories. Ken Marcus was making a pastrami sandwich when he noticed an odd pattern on a slice of pumpernickel bread, one that spelled out Geico. Ken found himself visiting Geico.com, saving hundreds of dollars on car insurance with great discounts. Later, Ken felt conflicted whether or not he should eat the slice of bread that saved him so much money. But he was so hungry.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Get everything that rocks on your smartphone. Dave and Chuck the Freak, The Rock Girl, The Riff Man Cave, and more. Oh, yeah, you can listen live, too. Download the 101 WRIF app for your iPhone or Android today from the App Store or Google Play Store. Brought to you in part by the Specs Howard School of Media Arts. Specs Howard's one-year programs in graphic design, broadcast, or digital media arts sharpen your creative edge. Find out more at SpecsHoward.edu or call 248-358-9000.
The big day is almost here. Baseball opening day, Monday, March 31st. Plan on heading downtown for all of the opening day festivities, but don't want to deal with the hassle of driving or parking? Crosstown Limos has you covered. Reserve a luxury car, limo, or party bus from Crosstown Limos for just $101 with promo code WRIF. Go right now to crosstownlimos.com or call 734-926-LIMO. That's 734-926-LIMO for Crosstown Limos.
Is breakfast really the most important meal of the day? At Buffalo Wild Wings, we think a case can be made for lunch. Think about it. Award-winning hand-spun wings in 16 signature sauces and 5 seasonings, buffalitos, wraps, burgers, and salads. Yeah, we're thinking that's a pretty good argument. Now throw in the fact that we've got over 50 big screens to watch all the sports you'll ever want. It's officially a no-brainer. So next time, make lunch your game-winning meal.
Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
101 WRIF.
Yeah. HD1 Detroit. You've got it on the award-winning Night Call on 101 WRIF. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much. 248-544-WRIF.
248-544-9743. This is a phone-in talk show. And it looks like we have someone calling in now. We have a few more open lines. Please call. We got an email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
Tell them what we're talking about.
So we're talking about Michigan and gay marriage and
how the constitutional ban on gay marriage has been overturned as unconstitutional by the federal
document. But there's been a
document.
Stay put upon it, and so we'll see where this goes. Terry wrote in, said, after the news broke of the judge's ruling on gay marriage, I couldn't help but cry. I've been with my girlfriend for 10 years, she says, and it finally feels like we are a step closer to getting married. Congratulations, Terry. After the decision, local news stations posted the good news on their social media sites. It was heartbreaking to read the hateful comments from people who feel that I, along with so many other couples, are somehow undeserving of happiness and love. I've come to understand that I can't change everyone's mind. However, I just don't understand why or how my life will affect straight couples and their marriages. Good question. And she said, thanks for to us for always being an ally. We certainly are.
And, that's what we've always posed. How would this hurt so-called straight marriages? I don't understand. I don't feel like mine is threatened. But, hey, I mentioned here was an unusual statement from a Michigan Republican.
Marriages that went kaput.
There you go. So here's Greg McNeely, a prominent Republican Party consultant from Grand Rapids. Ready for this?
Oh, no, I'm not sure. Am I?
Showed up to the Ingham County Courthouse. You ready for this? With his partner, Doug Meeks.
Because I know Grand Rapids is
a Lansing attorney. McNeely, 42, acknowledged that fellow Republican Schutte, that's the attorney general's, plan to appeal Judge Friedman's ruling could ultimately invalidate his marriage to Meeks if an appeals court or the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Friedman's decision. He said, I can't invalidate the relationship, but the paperwork might run into trouble. It's simply an issue of equality and bringing the treatment of unequal treatment under the law to an end. And this Republican says, in the end, love is not a political or partisan issue.
Thank you.
Unless it's made so by your party.
Yes.
You know, Greg?
I know. Greg, I don't understand you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Help us understand you.
All right, let's get a call here. Here is Erica. Erica is in Waterford. Hi, Erica. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. My issue on the whole thing is like, this guy brings up the fact that, you know, in 2004, all these Michiganders didn't approve of, you know, gay marriage. But it's 10 years later.
Yeah, hello.
We've come so far, and there's so many people accepting this now. And I think that the whole issue is that they're scared if they had another vote, then they would be, you know, it would be thrown right in their face and people would wake up and say, wow, this is something that we didn't even realize, you know.
You know, Erica, and that's an incredible observation. I didn't think
point.
Of that because one of the
people
arguments
have evolved in a decade.
Yeah, one of the arguments of the Michigan Attorney General who was defending the ban on gay marriage, he was saying, you know, 10 years ago, but yeah, and I didn't even put that together. I read those statistics that said now, what is it, like 60%, almost 60% of the people support the right of marriage equality.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, there's probably like 20% of that 60 are gay, you know. And I'm one of them. I'm a lesbian, and when the day that I found out, you know, that they released that ban, I literally cried.
No, I can imagine.
You're one of our people. We love you. Thank you.
I did. I cried. I was so happy, and I'm like, you know, for once, you know, people are starting to wake up and realize. And I knew it wasn't going to be long before somebody had to stick, you know, poke around with their stick and say, oh, hey, this isn't right, and then.
But I was going to say, Erica, that did you hear that letter from Terry that Jalene read about how she was reading these comments? I didn't even look at those in the Detroit News and Free Press.
Terrible comments.
If there was a story about how a nun saved a baby fawn that these trolls that seem to lurk, you know, in those comment sections would have something mean and nasty that would probably be, they would say, a nun of the so-and-so order saved a little baby fawn from a puddle. And then you'd look in and they'd find some way to turn it to some racist comment or something, or some homophobic comment.
But this is a whole nother animal that Erica is talking about, that Terry was talking about. You know,
right.
I mean, you're...
No, no, I'm saying don't pay any attention to those. No,
but you read them, Peter, so take your own advice.
I didn't this time.
It drives you crazy.
Yeah. No, I didn't. No. No, what I say is that before, people used to have to keep these ugly opinions to themselves.
Yeah.
But now they can give public expression to them. And
right. And the thing is like, how would you feel if that right was taken away from you? You wouldn't
right.
like it, would you?
No. All right, Eric. Erica. Well, congratulations for being for the state of Michigan
recognizing
your humanity.
Yes.
Yeah. What a thing to have to say. But history has its way. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a good night.
All right.
Appreciate
you too.
Your call. Right. I don't know what nobody's calling up, fortunately, and saying, no, they shouldn't be allowed to marry. Because
all those people are writing the comments on social media.
they're busy.
Yeah.
They're busy right now.
They have their little escape.
Well, it is difficult, I guess, to answer why that it should remain, given what the Constitution says, why it should remain a ban.
I really do love that what Erica said, though, you know, it has been 10 years. And
I didn't think of that. That's a great observation.
You know, and boy, I've noticed the changes in the last 10 years in attitudes for sure.
Well, that's good. Yeah, me too. Me too. And 10 years ago, were people holding hands in Ferndale? I don't know. They were in New York and San Francisco.
Because Ferndale rocks.
But, you know, it's interesting. New York, you think of one of the most liberal cities in the country and all that, but there is an incredible amount of homophobic violence, really violent stuff.
In New York,
In New York.
You know, Atlanta is very open.
Is that right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Men wear, and I'm talking a lot of men, a lot of gay men wear high heels and false eyelashes, honey, and no one looks at them sideways. I love it.
That's what I like about the South.
Right. That's the only thing I like about the South is the ATL.
Did I ever tell you some Johnny Reb shot my great-great-grandfather?
Oh, no, Peter. Right. Never. You've never told me that. In 17 years, you've never told me that one.
All right.
How dare you to tell me one story you haven't told me. Although, if you did tell me it, I probably wouldn't want to hear it.
You sound like my wife. I knew a guy that every time he'd tell a story, he'd say, well, Joan's heard this, you know.
Yeah.
She'd roll her eyes.
I now say that about you when I tell stories.
Okay. Here's another call at 248-544-WRIF. It is Al's in Belleville. Hey, Al, you're on the air. Welcome.
Actually, I'm right now I'm in Napoleon, but I'm on my way back to Belleville.
Okay.
My point being is I have several gay friends. I have a gay cousin that was recently married. As a matter of fact, he's married on Friday.
Okay.
Beautiful.
And I'm happy for him.
Yes.
I don't understand what the fuss is about. Okay? Love is love.
That's right.
You know, I am completely heterosexual. Okay? That doesn't matter, but that's beside the point. What's the big deal? Why can't these two people be together and be happy and enjoy their own union?
You know what, though? Think about what Erica said.
I'm
so taken with that about she said how things have evolved in just 10 years. I mean, I don't know, you know, your parents and you don't know my parents and all that, but for sure our grandparents, that 98% of our grandparents, if you said to them, what do you think about a man marrying a man or a woman marrying a woman, you'd be lucky to get like 2% agreement on that.
My grandmother wouldn't have cared.
Okay, well, there you go. But you know what I'm saying? What she was talking about, how people have evolved. Right now, that's what most people are saying. Who cares? You know, if I wouldn't do it, or some people even think that's pretty odd.
Well, you know, the thing
but
is,
so
it's,
what?
It's you're gay or you're straight. And like that pastor was saying on Channel 7, he was saying, it's a choice. You know what? It's not a choice. Yeah. Thank
it's
you.
It's not a choice. It's not a choice.
At
okay?
all.
Jason and Ryan, the couple that were married on Friday, and I'm sorry that I couldn't be there for it, but the couple that were married on Friday, they're it's not a choice. They're wired that way, okay?
Well, you know, Jeff Montgomery, who was the founder of the Triangle Foundation here in Detroit, God, probably, you know, maybe 20 or 25 years ago. I don't know when he founded it. But I interviewed him not, I don't know, 10 years ago or more.
Yeah.
And I said, what do you say, Jeff, to people who think that being gay is a choice? He said, yeah, it's a great choice on my part.
I'd love to be discriminated against.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd love to be judged.
Threatened.
It's
attacked.
Really fun.
Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
great time.
What a great choice. Yeah, yeah. So you're right. You're absolutely right, Al.
Well, congratulations
did
he say it was his cousin?
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Congratulations. And, tell them that from us.
Another marriage in the family. Thank you very much. 248-544-WRIF. Here is Mike. Mike is in Romeo. Talk about romance. Yeah, go ahead. Turn off your radio, Mike, and come to the phone. Yeah.
Turn your radio off. Okay. Catch up with us here.
Catch up with it, because we're on a long... We spent a seven-second delay. Now
we have a long delay because we have some feisty people sometimes who call in.
Right.
And sometimes that feisty person is...
Mike, are you there? Mike. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, Peter, how'd you feel if you were raised by two white women?
Two white women?
He would love it.
Yeah, or two black women or whatever. I mean, how would I know? If they were my parents, what do you think? I'd love them. How would you feel?
Well, who would your father figure be?
You don't have to. That's not required.
Why, rather than trying the Socratic dialogue, what's your point?
Two white women can't raise a black child properly.
Yes, they can.
Oh, my God.
That's a bunch of crap.
Why?
I want to let you know.
You know,
I know two white women, more than two white women and couples who are raising numerous black children, and those children are just fine.
Wait a minute. What gives you the idea that this is a problem? I mean, where does this come from? Experiential, or have you read studies, or what?
Have you seen it?
Yeah, you know the kind of discrimination they're going to feel? They hide. They're not proud of this.
But the thing is, if you raise your child correctly in how to react and how, and to be more evolved than the people who are judging them, trust me, these kids are brilliant. And they learn, and they, you know what, they're loved by these women, and nothing's going to change their minds about that.
You know, Mike, 50 years ago, if you lived in Raleigh, Virginia, you couldn't, and you were a white woman, you couldn't marry a black man. It was against the law in Virginia. And if you were to walk down the street 50 years ago, probably even in Detroit, in an interracial couple, people would be just looking at you, you know, with hate daggers and stuff like that. What do you think about what Erica said about people evolving?
It's still the same way today in many parts of Michigan.
No, you're probably right. You know, you would do best. Listen, this is a society dominated by white heterosexual males and their companions, white women, without a doubt, of which I am one. And the other people are considered minorities, which is, by the way, I think is a horrible expression.
Right.
However, and people that are outside of what is considered the norm often are suffer all sorts of things, from discrimination to violence to feelings of real self-conscious feelings and all that. But it's up to us, and you sound like a compassionate person, it's up to us to be welcoming and tolerant and to protect them from not having to suffer what people have, because they're, quote, different. And they're only different because usually of things that don't matter to the people that are being discriminatory or judgmental. I mean, what do you or I care what somebody else does in
their own personal family,
in their
life.
Family life or their bedroom. And, I mean, I don't know if you read the Metro Times, what's that guy, Savage Love column? I mean, you read that, you say, people, I don't know, doesn't say anything about their race or anything, but they're doing some pretty weird stuff. I'm saying, I never heard of that before. So, yeah. So,
I had a friend who had a, who was a, as you say, dominatrix. A dominatrix. She had dungeon in her basement.
A dominatrix.
Dominatrix, that's what you call it, yeah.
That's how you say it. What do you say it?
Dominatrix.
You say,
you know? I mean, and this guy made her walk in an aquarium full of live crickets, okay? That's weird, right? That's weird. But who cares? I swear to God, I want to go
to her. All right, Mike, thank you very much. Appreciate the question.
It's very expensive.
For crickets?
Extra for crickets.
This is my fantasy. What are you talking about? What do you mean she had a...
The client...
Wanted crickets.
Had a thing for insects. Not insects, insects.
Yeah. Little bugs, as we call it.
Bugs.
Yeah.
And it was his fantasy to have her walk in this little aquarium full of crickets.
So she was crushing them? That's horrible. I mean, crickets are cool. I mean, you know, we're different about...
That's only one of many stories that I have. They're not about me, I swear.
I've never been in your basement. But you know what?
Not many people go in my basement.
There's different bugs. You know, like if a ladybug lands on you, although now there's like these killer ladybugs.
I know.
But if there's ladybug, you say, oh, ladybug, play away. And you kind of blow it off.
Yes.
And on the other hand, like a fly comes on you, you know, of course you don't know where
you're like, ew, don't they throw up every time they land? I mean, you know, yuck.
Is that right?
Yes. Didn't you know that?
I did not know
Peter,
that.
Peter, I thought you knew everything.
Okay. Let's get a call in here. This is Jared. Jared's in Waterford. Hey, Jared, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Peter. It's actually Jarek. There's a K at the end.
Oh, Jarek. Sorry.
I get it all the time.
That's okay.
I haven't met another one yet.
Where's the name come from? Nice name.
Oh, it's actually Polish. In Poland, it would be Jarek.
Jarek.
Okay. Love it.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, well, yeah, I was just calling about that gentleman that just called and said that two white women wouldn't be able to raise a black child, and that's totally, totally incorrect. I mean, I don't agree at all. You don't even need a father figure. It's about discipline, teaching a child right from wrong, and, I don't know.
It's nurturing, right?
Yeah.
It just irked me. I don't know. I wanted to call you guys.
It's something that I think is I'm glad he brought it up because I'd like to beat it down into the ground.
Yeah. The argument.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you.
That hurt.
We talk about the father figures and heterosexual couples raising a child and all that. You know, there's great families that do that. I know a lot of them. On the other hand, I was just reading Nicholas. What's his name? In the New York Times. I can't think of his name. Christoph. Nicholas Christoph, yeah. You can go to nytimes.org and you can find that. And this is a story about this couple, this man and this woman, this is awful, had this 4-year-old child, and they began having her perform in pornographic movies.
Oh, my God.
Beginning when she was 4.
And there was a story, the California one, wasn't that a straight couple where they starved their children and chained one?
Well, yeah, there's lots of that.
Exactly my point, yes. There is neglect in male and female marriages as well.
Yeah.
It's about whether or not people should be able to have children, you know. I mean, marriage is no big deal. It doesn't affect any other person but the two people in the union. But with children, the child is affected. It shouldn't have anything to do with your sexual orientation. It should be whether or not you're fit to raise a child.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And for example, say they have a baby from birth. One of the partners has a baby from birth. They don't know any different until people start telling them that it's not okay. You know, they don't know any different.
What's that corny old Beatles song? All you need is love.
Yes.
All right. Jarek, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And apologies to Al from Belleville, who called right before and said he agrees with Erica and wants to know why we can't all just get along. Love can show the way. Yeah, and this is kind of talk show, folks, a lot of times the host, and it's me, it's never Jolene, you know, ba-bam, kind of, and sometimes cut you off before you're finished. And it's a way that I have to determine the show flows. And no insult is
I think you should. I think you've been over on that side of the board for enough years. I think we should switch places.
Okay, that's all right. I'm all about it.
I'll run it. You just sit over here.
All right.
Like the man of leisure.
I want to get Brian. He's in Analville. Oh, no, I'm going to spell that backwards. Livonia.
Oh, God.
And he has comments on gay marriage
as well.
And we want
to take your calls as well. If you're thinking about calling, hey, just do it.
And we got to get this Obamacare. Got this interesting email from a small business owner who voted for Obama. Now he's really got some concerns about Obamacare. We'll get to that as well.
Okay.
Open lines at 248-544-WRIF.
Thanks for listening to Night Call on 101 The Riff. Peter and Jalene will return with more of your calls in just a moment. Night Call. Night Call.
Is breakfast really the most important meal of the day? At Buffalo Wild Wings, we think a case can be made for lunch. Think about it. Award-winning hand-spun wings in 16 signature sauces and 5 seasonings, buffalitos, wraps, burgers, and salads. Yeah, we're thinking that's a pretty good argument. Now throw in the fact that we've got over 50 big screens to watch all the sports you'll ever want. It's officially a no-brainer. So next time, make lunch your game-winning meal.
Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Progressive presents Flo's newest smash hit. The Name Your Price tool gives you lots of coverage options.
The Name Your Price tool. You give us a budget and we'll show you a range of coverage options. But we can't go over all the dessert options. Your server will be back in just a second and he'll explain.
The Name Your Price tool, only from Progressive. Visit Progressive.com today.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is your Car Care Minute. Drivers are keeping their vehicles longer these days and will eventually need the services of a reliable auto repair shop. With that in mind, here's some tips on how to choose one wisely. Start shopping for a repair facility before you need one. Ask your friends and associates for their recommendations. Don't choose a shop based solely on location. Look for a neat, well-organized facility. The staff should be courteous, and the service technician or consultant should be willing to answer your questions. Look for evidence of certified technicians, such as the ASE sign. And when you do select your facility, reward good service with repeat business and customer loyalty. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com. This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into one 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
101 WRIF, locking in everything that rocks.
Yeah.
WRIF HD1 Detroit.
You could jet off to the UK to see Korn perform at the Brixton Academy May 2nd. Get all the details online at WRIF.com.
Peter and Jalene, you're listening to Night Call, the Riff's award-winning talk show on 101 WRIF.
All right, this is our second hour. I'd like to welcome you to it. 248-544-WRIF.
248-544-9743.
Get you on the air. You get to give your opinion. We've only been talking about the ruling by Judge Bernard Friedman, federal district judge, who overturned Michigan's ban on gay marriage. So there's marriage equality as declared by Judge Friedman. It's been put on hold, and a temporary restraining order, temporary stay of his decision was granted by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati.
We knew that was going to happen.
That was going to happen, and people have been weighing in. In about an hour, 1 a.m. Eastern Time, Nick Terse, author of Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam, describes how official policies resulted in millions of innocent Indochinese civilians killed and wounded, as well as U.S. soldiers. And Kurt Guyette, formerly of the Metro Times, where he was the news editor, and he's done great work for them. He's moved on to be the investigative reporter for the ACLU of Michigan, doing stuff about the emergency financial manager in Detroit and other Michigan cities. So a lot going on. Our Facebook, facebook.com/nightcall, and my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, and some interesting stuff there as well. Urging people to sign up for the Affordable Care Act. You have until March 31st to do it. But let's get back to our phones. And, whoa, we got a lot of folks waiting, so let's get to them. As promised, here's Brian in Livonia. Don't spell it backwards. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks, Peter. thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Okay.
Even he's getting tired of you saying that, Peter. Go ahead, Brian.
Wait a minute, Brian. Is that common among people in Livonia that they know it's Analville spelled backwards?
I'm from Port Huron, so I wouldn't know.
Port Huron?
Yeah.
Oh, God. This is going downhill fast.
Okay. Go ahead.
Come on, bring it up, boys.
All right, so I got this showstopper here for you.
Yeah.
According to the law, marriage is supposed to be between one man and one woman, right?
Well, according to the Michigan Constitution, that the provision that was, that just was declared unconstitutional.
Well, okay, well, we'll apply this to the Defense of Marriage Act, which is a federal law.
Right.
I don't recall seeing anywhere in that law where it defines what a man is or what a woman is. So in the case of, transsexuals or more to my point, intersex individuals.
Transgender.
Are they even lied? No, not transgendered, intersexed.
Yeah, that's one
and
of
it's
the...
more colloquially known as hermaphrodite, which is nowadays kind of a slur. But so exactly who are they supposed to be allowed to marry, if at all?
Well, that's what I mean.
Both male and female.
Yeah. Hmm. Things sure are different from granddad's day. Yeah. I mean, for one thing, I don't know how you slice it or count it, but, these conservatives, and I think particularly Rush Limbaugh, he said, they're only 2% of the population. Other people say it's as much as 12 or 15%. Either way, it's a small group of people that want to live their lives just like everybody else, particularly if it's 2%. What's he got his Oxycontin shorts in an uproar about anyway? If gays are only 2% of the population, why would he even get so exercised about it one way or the other, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Fine. I mean, it doesn't make a difference to me.
Well, I think we're finding that's the general thrust of things. Because I'll tell you, the people that are homophobic, they don't have the social space in which to express it anymore. You could 20 years ago, 50 years ago. You know, 50 years ago, there were guys would get together and hunt down gay people, or that they would find some gay guy to give him oral sex and then beat him up and stuff like that.
Still happens.
Yeah, well, it still does happen. But that the social space for that is disappearing, which is good. So I think most people just agree with what you're saying, Brian. All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So happy to hear from a lot of straight dudes who are supportive.
But he never said whether that spelling Livonia backwards.
Peter.
Move on? All right. Here's Mike in Detroit. Mike, it's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us on WRIF. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, quick question. With the gay marriage thing, what were their principles that they stood on in court? Like, what were they saying? Like, it was a First Amendment right, or I mean, what was unconstitutional about it?
Mostly the 13th Amendment, equal protection under the law.
Interesting.
Yeah.
My thing would be, what if we? Let me be honest. Like, I'm not for gay marriage, but it's not that I look at it almost like somebody's religion. You know, like I might not be. Somebody might be an atheist. I'm not. But, I mean, they can be an atheist. You mm-hmm. know, they can, I mean, what did they do to me? You
sure.
know what I'm saying?
No, yeah,
it's
right.
Like it's weird that it can, it's almost like we use the state to, like, look after us on issues that, it's like, how does the state get in between marriage anyway? It's supposed to be between the people that's in that contract together, I would think. You know what I'm saying? Like, in that agreement.
Well, that is, I think that still falls under equal protection of the law when you talk about contracts. And, you know, the Catholic Church or a Jewish synagogue or a Muslim temple could say, you know, you could go there, right? Well, not you, but, you know, a gay couple could go to a Jewish synagogue and say, we want you to marry us. And if they were like Orthodox Jews, they would say, get out of here. We don't want to marry you. They're perfectly within their rights. Who cares? Probably. And I only say that probably because they have been, you know, when they marry you, I mean, what do they say? By the power invested in me by the state of Michigan. That's the reason, for instance, in public accommodations, someone can't say, I don't want to serve you because you're gay, or I don't want to serve you because of your skin color, or I don't want to serve you because of your religion. And because you can say, well, that's my choice. Well, it's not your choice because it's public accommodation. And that's what, you know, that's what I was saying earlier about the state being neutral towards everyone and not enforcing people's however you cut it, at best calling it their particular view, at worst, which it really is, allowing people to act out their prejudices publicly. They can't do it. It's against our Constitution.
What I find interesting, though, is that it's like it seems like we're at times, and I'm not saying this, and I'm going to get off the air because I'm going to let you guys take other calls, but it seems like at times we almost it's like we're not consistent with, like, okay, if either you got, like, if I was to use that principle, I would say the First Amendment, hands down. You know, it's that to me, that is their religion. They can do what they're going to do. I don't have to do it. I don't even have to like it. But it's like, really, where do I stand? How can I affect it? I mean, I can, like, let's say someone came to my church and I said, well, we don't want to marry you. I don't want to go where I'm not wanted myself. You know, if I go to a restaurant and they even act like they don't want me there, hey, you know what? I'm going to go hang out with people that want to hang out with me. That's just how, I mean, you know, it's common sense. And I think once people are able to understand that and respect that, certain barriers, I think people start to treat each other more, I guess, like humans instead of like
fairly.
Now, if you look across the world, and it's getting harder and harder for me to keep track of the news when there's just everybody is almost like looking for a reason to fight, to find differences and all that. And people do have differences of views and beliefs and all that. But, you know, the idea that that it comes to either discrimination, let alone violence or wars. Phew. All right, Mike, thank you very much.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Mike.
Your views. And let's see, here's one from Cole. Cole is in South Lyon. Cole, whoa, what is it?
Cole's in a car.
Hey, guys, how's it going? Yeah, it's a real piece of crap car I got here.
Well, it runs, hey.
Yeah, it runs, so I'm driving it.
Okay.
I wanted to put my views in on the overturn of gay marriage. Now,
sure.
I'm a heterosexual male, okay?
Yep.
But I completely and totally disagree with the gay marriage ban. I believe that marriage should be between two human beings. It doesn't matter whether they're male, female, doesn't matter what race, doesn't matter what religion. Just as long as it's between two human beings, you know, it's perfectly fine. People have the God-given right to be happy. People have the God-given right to marry who they want to marry, as long as it's another human being. These people that get, you know, that they'll go on shows and they'll say, oh, you know, I'm in love with my car, I'm in love with my cat. You know, that's just a psychological disorder that they got to let get worked
there
out.
There is a woman who married the Eiffel
Tower. They got to get worked out between themselves. Right.
Wait. Isn't that a classic rock song from Queen, I'm in love with my car? I think so. It is, actually.
I saw it on that My Strange Addiction show. That guy was like, he would like caress his car and like lick his car and stuff like that.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
I mean, he was literally in love with his car.
Cars
and
need
that's
love
just
too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Your car needs love.
You know, let me ask you.
It's getting it too.
Hey, let me ask you a question that normally I don't ask people, and that's how old you are.
I'm 18.
Okay.
18 years old.
All right. You know what? That's what we were go back to what Erica said, that everything has changed so quickly in such a short amount of time that it's hearing people that are, you know, hateful towards gays and all that must just sound like exactly
archaic.
What it is. Archaic.
Just makes me sick.
Yeah.
It just makes me sick.
But you know what? A generation ago, and let alone two generations ago, that kind of discrimination and hatred and punitive spirit was common. It's like I'm saying, you know, I'm sure maybe my grandparents were wonderful, loving people. I'm sure yours were and all. And probably still are. Well, then let me say your great grandparents, but they probably manifested the attitudes of that era, say 50, 60, 70 years ago. Now, hello, it's 2014, and the vast majority of people that are your age, Cole, have the same feelings, and good for you.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And just love is all you need. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I want to get to Paul. Stay on the line. I want to hear about drug testing. But I did want to bring this up, and I hope the person that wrote this letter, of which is actually way too long to read, it's from Steve, and he wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And he wrote, I help run a family business. We have a great staff of over 60 people, and we've supplied health care to them since we started the business in 1964. They said we had to give up our Cadillac plan because it wasn't affordable anymore, and the two choices my employees were left to choose from still went up over 25%. Now, it's quite a long email, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but what he is articulating, and I am assuming that this is an honest and accurate letter, because, you know, the Republicans that want to sink Obamacare and deny people coverage sometimes have, set up these straw men, you know, these phony letters to the editor and things like this. But I'm assuming, Steve, that this is you and that you have a family business and all of that. And so he's very, he says he's going to have to pass along some of these costs to his employees. And he says, what does government run efficiently? Well, there's a number of things that they do, including Medicare. And here it is. There are a lot of problems with Obamacare. And if you go to my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, poor Jolene, talk about hearing things. Because people, when they hear Werbe, they don't even have a clue how to spell it. That's why I have to say it every time. It urges people to register for Obamacare before the March 31st deadline. And it's behind. It needs, I forgot what it is, 6 million, and it has 5 million, or it needs 5 million. But they're like a million behind. And there are so many things wrong with this health program, beginning with the rollout. But you know what? Why it's being sabotaged at every turn, mostly by the Republicans, because for one thing, they just the idea of helping people is inimical to them. Oh, they'll talk, we want to help the poor and all that, but, you know, they only want to help the rich guys and the big corporations, not small businesses. They don't even care much about small businesses, to tell you the truth, Steve. One of the things they could have done was to look at this health care plan as it was written by the Democrats and said, this is flawed. Here's what we got to do to make it real. One of the things they could have done would have been to have supported a public option, which meant the government would have been in the health insurance business and would have run competition. Isn't this what the capitalists and the Republicans love, right? Business competition that would have driven the price of the premiums for these private insurance policies down. And this wouldn't have been a problem then if there would have been a public option. Probably not. But there's lots of other things. I talked to these people. I had breakfast with these people today that both signed up for Obamacare. And, I mean, they're not, they're, I don't know, 50s or something like that.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, it's great. And one of them got subsidies and is paying $150 a month. Previously, you know, a guy in his 50s doesn't have any health insurance. Yeah. Now he does. And he's a rock and roller, bass player. Not a good way to be financially secure, although, you know, gotta love him.
Right? Yes, absolutely.
Does great music. There's enough other people that say this, you know, this happened, that happened. But all of this is an argument for single-payer health care.
Yes, which
because
not
you know what
the
happen-
way it works out.
You know what happens when you turn 65? When you turn 65 or when your parents turn 65 or your grandparents turn 65? They got a card, and they could sign up for this Part B, and then if they could afford it, they would also get supplemental insurance. So it would be, I don't know, a couple $100 a month or something like that, and they're fully covered. That's it. I mean, even that's too much for a lot of poor people to have to pay.
Sure.
But it sure is better than what it has now, and it would knock out the profit end of it, so it would really, really be affordable for everybody. Now, the Obama administration is attempting to persuade millions of young people to buy insurance using healthcare.gov. And, oh, by the way, this friend of mine said it was tough getting through the labyrinth of the website. But you know what? If you wind up, you have health insurance, you're paying $150 a month, that's pretty good. And you can get a lot of subsidies as well. I don't know what, I think you can almost get it if you take the bottom rung of it. And why should there be a bottom rung? Bronze.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you look for tin. No, I don't think they have that. I mean, why should, for instance, if you're a young person and you're at a job making $8 an hour, why should you have to pay $150 or even $50 a month? I mean, because, well, I guess seniors do. I guess seniors do have to pay for that Part B. But, you know, we can afford to spend $500 trillion a year preparing for war and meddling in the affairs of every country in Europe and Asia. We can say we're going to send billions of dollars to Ukraine and don't have enough to bail out Detroit.
Right.
Yeah, we got roads that are undrivable, and we're sending 10 fighter jets to Poland or someplace like that. Come on. The money's there. The will isn't. But here, it says President Obama and his aides are racing against the March 31st deadline. When enrollment ends for the year, they are waging their final public relations push with a zeal that underscores how critical success is for Mr. Obama's political legacy and how far behind they remain. You know what? I'm sure anybody that wants to be president must have an ego of some magnitude, right? But to say that the interest in this is his political legacy is really, it's terrible. It's not true. I don't think. Officials have scaled back their original estimate of signing up 7 million, now 6 million, but according to enrollment figures released Monday, more than 1 million signups will be needed to reach the reduced goal by the end of March, and there is concern that the administration still needs a larger proportion of 18 to 34-year-olds, the young and presumably healthy people whom insurance companies need as customers in order to keep premiums reasonable for everyone. And I'll tell you, given the income I made when I was between 18 and 34, if someone said, you got to pay another $100 or $150 bucks a month, I'd probably say, you know what? Nothing's
going
to happen to me.
Yeah.
Except as someone I know, when their Jeep that they're doing mountain trails with falls down like 150 feet, and they wind up needing over $1 million worth of medical care. Then all of a sudden you need it. You know, the actuary tables, the chances of you contracting some terrible disease or what have you probably are, you know, the younger you are, the more limited they are. But everybody knows, somebody young, that something pretty awful happened. Accidents, disease, what have you.
Right.
Where did I see that, like, isn't the highest rate of injury and death from young people are accidents?
I don't know.
Car, skiing, yeah. You know, stuff like that.
Well, we take a few more risks when we're younger, too.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. On Thursday, Mr. Obama urged daytime TV viewers to sign up for coverage in an appearance on the Ellen DeGeneres show from the White House. In the past 3 weeks, Mr. Obama has met with YouTube personalities in the Roosevelt Room, including a science geek, a drunken chef. Have you ever seen her?
Who?
This is some woman. She's a drunken chef. I mean, I don't even know how they can show this. It's got like 5 million hits. Just Google drunken chef.
Okay.
And this woman's drinking.
As a chef, I'm interested in
drinking and making grilled cheese sandwiches.
Oh, God.
They've got Michelle Obama on the case, Vice President Biden, and all that. So they're really up for it. So the Republicans know that there is no turning back from this national health care. It's not like they're going to take 5 million people and say, hey, what? Guess what? You're out of here. You don't have it. Ah, ha, 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 like that. So I'm sure what they'd probably try to do is turn it over completely to their corporate buddies. But the Senate House Republicans say that they're going to have something called the House Obamacare Accountability Project, and they've got a plan, except they're keeping it under wraps.
Oh, really?
They're not. They're afraid that if they that if they give out any details, they will give Democrats a target and allow them to regain footing, just as attacks on the law are taking a political toll. So with each passing week, the Affordable Care Act is changing the political terrain. And essentially what happens when you get these millions of people involved, you can't repeal it. So too effing bad, Republicans, you know.
Good luck.
But again, what we should have, is Medicare for everybody, you know, right? As soon as you're born, you get, like, Medicare. You got to pay, you know, a few bucks a month. And you say, no, that's terrible. That's socialized medicine. Well, it's socialized medicine for people over 65. If you are a vet, you have socialized medicine.
Right.
And there's some other groups. If you're disabled, you have socialized,
yes.
You know, Social Security disability and all of that. And what about, you know, like just for people 64, make it 64, right?
Bring it down.
Why not 63? Right, yeah. All right. Anyways, all of this. If you think about this, we could put all of this behind us. Be easy. Just everybody chill about gay marriage. Okay, that's gone. Everybody we get a national health care program. We fund it.
A good one.
Yeah, we take $200 billion a year out of the military budget, and I don't even know if it would cost that much for national health care, and that's it.
And that is a drop in the hat. Too. That's a small amount of
drop in the bucket.
In the bucket. I am so tired. It's a hat tonight.
You could
say,
yeah. You put the hat on, you get water all over you.
Listen, you work double shifts on Sundays.
No, you do. You
try
do.
To do a talk show.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't
it's
even
not
mention
easy.
That. 248-544-WRIF.
You can put it in the bucket, okay?
Here's David. He's from a city that you go down to Market Street and Castro, and there is an enormous rainbow flag flying, San Francisco, California. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Oh, say can you see? Right. Hey, Peter, Jaleen.
Well, hey, Dave.
I'll tell you what, David. Jaleen demands that I don't do math on the air. We're demanding you don't say.
I thought you sounded great.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, appreciate it. You know, it's funny when they had the, this is 20-something years ago, when the apartheid was still running in South Africa, I went down to UC, not UC, the SF State campus, and they had this little shanty town down there, and we knew that the cops were going to raid it. It was right at the end of Christmas break, and so I stood in a pouring rain all night long in this really great pea jacket that, you know, sailors wear just to keep the rain off. it worked perfect and stood guard way up on top of the student center up there. And sure enough, the cops tried to raid us, and you know, in the middle of the night, and we stopped them because they couldn't drive in the mud. So at the morning, as the morning dawned, the shanty town still stands. So that was great, yeah. Hey, you know, I was going to say...
You've been drinking? No, go ahead.
No, not the least.
Okay,
know.
Go ahead.
Peter.
But the I was going to say, I the more I've noticed, I came from the poor side of a very wealthy family. Both sides were very wealthy, but my parents were Romeo and Juliet kids, so neither side of my parents got their inheritance. And so we were always... basically realizing that the wealthier people got, the more cowardly they got. And so, you know, the cowardly rich. And that
What do you mean, cowardly?
Well, they toady to the people that are higher, you know, richer and richer. And,
oh, yeah.
And they never stand for themselves anymore. The richer they get, the more they want to, you know, get richer. And the more they try to get richer, the more they toady up to even richer people. And it's a sad position because in the long run, you know, America is supposed to be these proud, independent, free-thinking people. But the more we get these one percenters, the more cowardly they get, and the more we get caught up in insane traps. You look at the stock market, and you look at the just the crazy pecking orders that are going on with the rich, and so you end up with these insane bad laws. You end up with, you know, you look at Citizens United and where all of this horrible money is coming from. You know, everybody thinks about Citizens United buying congressmen, but I think what's even more shocking about the cowardly rich is that they're going to try to buy the sheriffs, they're going to try to buy the sewer departments and the water departments. And you look at West Virginia, where they've had these hazardous waste spills in the river. How much Citizens United secret money is going to go into making sure that water boards and sewer boards are going to be run by other cowards?
Well, and they want to privatize everything.
Yeah, well, it is top down. The Koch brothers, of course, and the Citizens United was a Supreme Court decision that allowed that said corporations were people and had the freedom of speech and could finance elections. Koch brothers, K-O-C-H. Republicans are addicted to Coke. That's a new Democratic Party slogan that's fairly accurate. And they've spent about $500 million so far trying to get Republicans in that would limit a woman's right to choose, that would reduce regulations. In fact, I'm going to talk about them a little when I come back. So, David, thank you very much. The city by the bay is where you are, and gay marriage, not a really big deal there. All right.
No.
Bye-bye.
And I'm curious as to what Paul has to say, because I have a feeling, I know there's been a lot of talk about welfare and drug testing. I have a feeling that's what he's going to talk
about. All right, Paul, do this. We got to take a break right now, and you're up next. We won't do anything until we talk to you, so hold on. Also, if you'd like to join Paul on the air, 248-544-WRIF.
Make your opinion heard. Call us at our new number, 248-544-WRIF. Peter and Jaleen will return with more of your calls in just a moment. Night call. Opening day rocks with The Riff at the Fillmore, March 31st. Doors open 7:30 a.m. with Dave and Chuck the Freak live until 10. Grab limited edition Riff opening day shirts and more while supplies last. Sponsored in part by the U.S. Navy, a global force for good. Details at WRIF.com. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Here are Peter and Julie.
Indeed, our final segment, 248-544-WRIF. And let me tell you what's happening at 1 a.m. But first, we promise nothing but Paul from Mount Clemens, who wants to talk about drug testing.
Sure.
Did you flunk, Paul?
Flunk.
What?
Hi, yeah, Paul, it's Marge.
Hi, Marge.
Paul?
Hi.
Oh.
What's going on?
This welfare stuff that's been on the news and stuff.
Yeah.
You know what? I believe in drug testing because I worked in a retail store for 6.5 years. when they came in there with $600 of food stamps, they bought garbage for the kids to eat.
Who's the they you're talking about here?
Huh?
What about testing for alcohol?
Well, yeah, they could do that, too.
Oh, God. He was joking.
Yeah. You know, I don't really have time for this. Okay. Let me get into Mariah here from South Lyon. Mariah, hi, you're on the air. That wasn't Paul. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Mariah.
Hey, I heard you talking earlier about, like, the health care plan and everything. I was just wondering, do you know of anybody, Republican or Democrat, who's actually read the whole thing?
It was one of these huge laws, isn't it? For how many hundreds?
I mean, like, well, like, the whole thing about, like, the U.S. Constitution, nobody's ever read that. So, like, when she said we have to pass the bill to see what's in it, I actually laughed really loud at that. I just can't figure out why they would just pass something without even looking what's in it. Anybody.
Well,
I would
did that anybody. With the Patriot Act.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, that's, but on the other hand, that's kind
Remember
of
an
invidious comparison. I think that, you know, laws that have very complex definitions to them are these enormous tomes. And I don't
that's
think
that's what I'm saying, Peter. They gave him 3 days to read 800 pages of
And usually
text,
what happens
and
is.
It didn't happen.
I mean, it was. Each senator or each somebody from the House of Representatives is not going to go through every law. That's why they have staff people to do it, to see what's in there. But it could have been made much, much simpler. But, you know, the Republicans at every turn tried to block it, tried to make it as awful and as unworkable as possible, rather than trying to get behind it and understand that there were, you know, literally millions of people without health care that were going to be suffering all sorts of stuff. You know, let me see. Where was I? I was just looking at this, what the results of people not having health care is going, or just, you know, a lot of these Republican governors said they wouldn't allow this expansion of Medicaid. And actually, this isn't what I was looking for, but that's going to result in, like, the deaths of thousands of people. So, yeah, I mean, could you make a simple law? Yeah, you got to make a simple income tax law, for instance. And it doesn't have to be as complex as it does. Maybe we should have a constitutional convention, start all over, something like that. All right, Mara, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Wow, what happened there? I did something and everything turned yellow.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's scary. Let me see here. Okay, there we go.
Oh, I see what you did. Go ahead.
Yeah, all right, good. By the way, one of the things that's happening as a result, and to me, this has the opposite effect. One of the things Republicans say, it's a job killer. Well, it's not killing jobs, but a lot of these private, a lot of these private firm fast food places that are going to be required, because they have over 50 employees, going to be required to offer health insurance. And I got it. We'll just make all of our employees part-time. So in order to maintain their profit level, they're going to just screw their workers even more. They're paying them bum wages. They're not giving them benefits. And when they're required to do it, what do? They get around the law by making people part-time. But it also, it's not limited to private businesses. Cities, counties, public schools, and community colleges around the country have limited or reduced the work hours of part-time employees to avoid having to provide them with health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. Now, there is a solution, and it is repeal Obamacare and have Medicare for everybody.
Single-payer health care.
Single-payer health care. The United States government, like they do in every single other country in the world. Industrialized country in the world, right. Countries on both sides of I think it has Mexico, don't they? They certainly do in Canada.
I don't know about Mexico.
And a lot of people say, oh, they have to wait for like 100 days, even if they have acute appendicitis and all that.
Not true.
Yeah. Boy, I've never had this before. I think I'm going to sneeze.
No, don't do it.
Have you ever heard of a broadcaster sneezing?
I no, but I've felt like sneezing when I've been on the air before.
Yeah, but you're doing DAA. That was so-and-so, and we'll be right back with some Bob, and then you're done. But I've got to do this for another. Wow. all right, here is Mike and Romeo. Mike, hi, you're on the air.
Can't get him yet because he's still talking to Jefferson.
No. Oh, is he? Okay.
Yes.
All right, sorry. Didn't realize that. Okay. But wait a minute, I had some more things about, oh, here it is. Damn, I was going to talk to Mariah. A study just released by researchers at Harvard Medical School and the City University of New York finds, quote, the number of deaths attributable to the lack of Medicaid expansion in opt-out states. Opt-out states are these Republicans who, feeding their right-wing base, say they do not want to expand Medicaid, even though it was being paid almost everything, or was, I think it was paid completely by the federal government for like 3 or 5 years, and then 90%. But they, you know, they just didn't want that to happen. The number of deaths attributable to the lack of Medicaid expansion in opt-out states is between 7,000 and 17,000. Medicaid expansion in opt-out states would have resulted in 712,000 fewer people screening positive for depression.
Oh, my gosh.
And a 250,000 fewer individuals suffering catastrophic medical expenditures. This is what happens to people in this society when you do not have proper medical care. And these Republicans are trying to do everything they can to stop it. If Obama and the Republicans would have had a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate, they probably would have passed something like single-payer health care.
And the Republicans?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm getting tired, too.
I'm tired, but I can still catch you.
Yeah. That's just a drop in the hat.
Or the bucket.
Yeah. Yeah, if in other words, if there would have been control of the Senate, you know, I'm not, wait, you know what, I'm not even sure of that, but there certainly would have been a better program than this. Where, okay, I thought you were coming over here to
I was reading, take over. I was reading what Jefferson typed. It's ridiculous. Just carry on.
Mike from Romeo asks, what's your opinion about boys showering together in the 30s?
In the 30s or their 30s. Shower away. I don't care.
Yeah, who cares? Right. Man, what a weird question.
I know.
In the 30s. In their 30s, it probably means. In their 30s. I don't know. They're not boys.
Well, you go in the locker room after your handball games.
Yeah, we're all showering together.
Do you really?
You know what? Actually...
You used to go to the Schwitz. I'll never let it go.
At LA Fitness?
Yeah.
Where we play handball now?
Yeah.
They actually have individual stalls.
Oh, but they do?
I was surprised because that's the only place. Like all the Ys at the YMCAs just have big shower rooms.
I just go home and shower.
And you leave all funky and everything like that?
I don't go to the Y anyway.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if I work out ever, it's over here.
Upstairs.
And then I go home.
Okay, but they got a shower here.
I'm not going in that shower. Ew.
Yeah, that's where...
I'm going in my own shower.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's move on.
Let's do.
Here's Dan in Detroit. Dan, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Warden, how are you guys?
We're good. What's up?
I just wanted to touch base on the gay marriage and the Obamacare stuff.
Sure.
I'll try to make it as quick and to the point as I can.
Go ahead.
The gay marriage, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't think that anybody should be able to tell somebody that they can't marry somebody because they're not a man and a woman.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. I really love it when these people try to argue, oh, it's going to ruin the sanctity of marriage. No.
Yeah, it's pretty sanctimonious.
People getting married for the wrong reasons are ruining the sanctity of marriage, not because a man and a man want to get together because they love each other, or a woman and a woman.
Right.
And about the Obamacare, parts of it are great. I don't think that you should be turned away for a pre-existing medical condition. I don't think that the way they went about it is completely right. There's just one part in particular that I've seen is about the religion. If you're Muslim, you're not required to pay for it because it goes against the religion because it's considered a gamble.
Hey, Dan.
That's not true.
Not true. Absolutely not
true.
That's
not true?
No.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. Go to this website, Snopes, Snopes.com. In fact, maybe I'll have Jalene do it, and I'll bet you that'll be one of the rumors. You got to be really careful about that kind of stuff, because I get that stuff through email all the time. And I don't know, maybe just doing this for so long, just my antenna pops up and yeah. I can, and you know, people I know, like my dad's wife, you know, would, I hope she's not listening, would send out repeatedly these things. I'd go, oh no, she's done it again. And sure enough, you know, it would be, So, you know, anybody can write anything on email, and some of it really looks official, or that it looks, it's backed up. Sometimes it says checked by Snopes. You know, then you just.
Yeah, here it is on Snopes.
Okay, go ahead.
Muslims in the U.S. are specifically exempted from legislative requirements to purchase health insurance. It is false.
Yeah. And does it say when it started? It usually gives a whole history.
It's a very long.
Yeah, but check it out. Yeah, it's, and you know, please do not feel embarrassed about that, because
yeah,
it's
but just keep that website in mind.
Yeah, when you see something that's absolutely outrageous, you can just check it out. I mean, sometimes I've thought, I said, this can't be true. Once in a while, it is, but usually it is.
Usually it's not.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate
your
call.
I'm glad we could straighten that out for you.
Yeah. Here, okay, I got to ask him. Here's Paul in Livonia.
Oh, Peter, don't do it.
Paul, let me ask you. Do people in Livonia yeah. know that yeah, Livonia is Anoville spelled backwards?
Don't start that with me again. I don't want to.
See, Peter, he's getting tired of it.
Okay. I'm just wondering whether my friend was the only person that made it up, or whether this is something that teenage boys talk about from the time they're 15.
Now you know.
Yeah, I never heard that until you brought it up. It's kind of
well, there you go.
Oh,
cool.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, Paul, go ahead.
No, but you guys have got me to call in tonight too because of this healthcare thing in this country, and you have the conservatives that are supposed to be these pro-lifers, and most of these conservative politicians are con artists, anyways. They're getting paid. They have health coverage from the taxpayers that they are denying health care from. The tax dollars on people that aren't making enough to even have health care.
I don't get it.
I almost get to the point that the so-called pro-life party is that they're trying to cull the population.
Reduce the population, yeah. But well, here, let me just give you an example. I never even finished with some of those stats. If there would have been Medicaid expansion in those Republican-dominated states, it would have resulted in 422,000 more diabetics receiving medication for their illness.
Wow.
200,000 more mammograms among women age 50 to 64. 443,000 more pap smears among women age 21 to 64. And so this is, let me see, researchers found that because of 25 states, Republican-dominated, opting out of the Medicaid expansion, 7.78 million people who would have gained coverage will remain uninsured.
I mean, so they're heartless.
That's interesting. The kind of thing where you hold little fingers and you say, because I was going to say the same thing,
yeah.
The same thing. Heartless, lack of compassion, just these mean-spirited, awful people that got to be... We got to get their hands off the lever of power, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Paul. Thank you very
much.
Paul. Appreciate your call. Bet this one is going to be on the opposite side of things. It's Ron from Shelby. Ron, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, Julie, how you been?
Good.
Good, Ron.
Yeah. I just want to comment on Obamacare and mention something that you haven't talked about.
Sure.
About Obamacare, but... Obamacare is nothing but a scam. It's fraudulent and it's unconstitutional, and you need to get constitutional lawyer Chris Ann Hall on your show as a guest, and she will explain it all. And what I wanted to bring up is nobody has ever talked about the death panels that Obamacare talks about in Section 1252, okay?
Wait a minute here. Isn't that something that Sarah Palin brought up about 8 years ago and was it was ridiculous?
If you have a terminal illness, okay, maybe not you personally, you know, but your case goes before this panel, okay, and they decide whether you get any kind of treatment or not. In other words, whether you live or die.
Wait, what's the section again? 1252. All right. Can you look that up, Snopes? Death Panels, Section 1252. All right. We'll check
to.
That. Yeah.
Anybody that signs up for Obamacare, I'll tell you, doesn't know what they're signing away.
Well, what do you think about people that have no insurance?
What's 1262?
1252.
1252, what is
death, it? Death panels.
Okay, well, it wasn't 1252. So.
1250. Yeah, it might not be in there. It might not be on Snopes or anything like that, but we can take a look. Please may try death panels. No, nothing? Okay. Anyway, you know, a lot of that stuff and how, you know, listen, anytime there's a bureaucracy, guess what? They're bureaucratic. But and that's always the downside of it. And trying to determine how human a bureaucracy is always a challenge. Wait a minute, Jolene has phone.
Here it is, breaking Snopes news. Obamacare, the claim, Obamacare mandates that no one over 75 will be given major medical procedures unless approved by an ethics panel.
Ethics panel, yeah, that death panel.
False,
yeah. Well, why does it say it's false? Read it.
Well, you know, this is very long.
Very long?
Yeah, extremely long.
Well, here, I don't know how to break this to you, Ron, but we're looking at something that debunks falsities, and it says what you're saying is false.
Well, you know what the last caller said about they're trying to lower the population of the world. This is true. These globalists want to get their population down to about 1 billion people, and we are being poisoned in more ways than you can imagine. And I know numerous ways.
I think it's overpopulated, so Peter and I decided not to have any kids.
Yeah. Would it be rude of me to ask you how old you are as I ask somebody else?
No, I don't mind. I'm 57.
57. So in 8 years, you are going to have socialized medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah? What do you think? You're going to refuse it?
Well, I'm on SSD right now. I have Medicare.
Okay. Well, you already do. Well, don't you know that there's some of your conservative brethren that would like to get rid of all that?
Well, I'm already covered under Social Security.
So what are you saying? That screw other people?
This Obamacare is not going to work. I guarantee you.
Well, it might. I think it has. I mean, like I said, I think it's being sabotaged. But what would you think about Medicare for everybody?
Yeah. Well, I don't see why we can't do like what Canada has.
Ron! We love
you.
We
agree.
We love
you. You're our people.
All right. Okay. I got to move on because we're getting towards the end of the show. Thank you. Well, that was a surprise. He's going to be kicked out of his next meeting. Here's Todd in
He's
Madison.
Famous, you know.
Todd, hi. You're on the air.
Hello, Peter. Hello, Jillian.
Hi.
For, great show, as always.
Thank you.
I have lupus. I'm still around. There's no death panel.
Yeah.
I don't get where...
Wow.
I've even looked it up, and that was something that one of the Republicans was looking at putting into the bill for the Affordable Care Act, but it was axed out.
I mean, they wanted ethics, what they call ethics panel, and, you know, the nicknamed death panels by
they
Sarah
wanted
Palin.
To put it in, but everybody else said no.
Well, you know, it's so odd, Todd, that we have not come across anybody on this show who's talked about signing up for the Affordable Care Act. Is that anything you're covered under?
Yes.
And is this new?
No.
Because you have a pre-existing condition, right?
Yeah, I have a pre-existing condition and I'm covered. Actually, I've got 5 pre-existing conditions.
Boy.
And 27 strokes, and I'm covered.
27 what?
Strokes.
Oh, stroke? You've had strokes 27 times?
Yes, many strokes.
Wow.
But I've had 27 of them, and I'm covered.
Well, wowee.
And were you covered right along, or are you covered now because you have Obamacare?
I was covered now because I have Obamacare.
Wow. Well, I guess you're a big supporter of it then, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the way it should be.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. Well, good.
If it worked in where Romney was governor, it's going to work for the rest of the country.
Yeah, that's
out in Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's interesting because people forget that Obamacare is actually RomneyCare. Although RomneyCare was working a lot better because how inclusive it was and because everybody was on board with it rather than Obama and the Democrats having to fight Republican amendments every inch of the way to make it worse and worse and worse. Because they're counting on this. There's no way in the world, for instance, that, because the Republicans, as we know, fought against, way back, 80 years ago or more, fought against Social Security and the minimum wage and, all this stuff, like this. And they fought against Medicare. They said this was socialized medicine. It was going to blah, 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 blah. Now, there's no way in the world that they would actually try to repeal Medicare. And they're actually not going to repeal the Affordable Care Act, even if in 2016 they elected a House and a Senate and a Republican president. They're not going to do it. So what they're using it for, this is just political BS. They are using it as a lever, the fact that it's not working well, partly because of them, partly because of some of the flaws in the law itself, to gain access to the power of government, and in which they couldn't care less about health care. What they care about are corporate profits, taking regulations off the worst polluters like the Koch brothers who financed their racket and all of that. So this is just a huge ruse, their opposition to the Affordable Care Act.
But doesn't it sound like they want to get rid of it so they can bring their own in? That's what it also sounds like.
Well, yeah, they may do that. I mean,
they're all concerned about poor, lazy people. Yeah. This is what they think, you know?
They do. I'm curious to see. They say they've got a plan. I mean, I forgot who else had a plan and never came up with it. I can't remember. But they say they have an alternative health plan. They have like these, in which they, some of them are here, we have at work called health savings accounts. Which not only feeds the insurance industry the way Obamacare does, but it also feeds Wall Street because you have to have what you're essentially doing is turning these, you're investing, essentially. You have these accounts and the money is invested and all that. So that would be double great for the Republicans. Not only do you feed the medical industry, but also the banksters. They'd be in heaven.
Always got to include them, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Who just made record bonuses, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they were doing so right by
Shocker.
The American people. All right, well.
Take care of yourself,
Todd. Please,
we're glad you have health insurance.
Take good care of yourself, and thank you for calling.
An example of someone who desperately needs it.
Yeah. Well, and just think, before, he couldn't get it because he had a pre-existing condition.
So there is a good thing right there.
Right. And another good thing is Michigan's ban against the gay marriages was overturned.
We just have to wait a little longer.
History is on hold, but you've seen it develop before your eyes. Coming right up, Nick Terse, author of Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam, will join me. Also, Kurt Guyette, investigative reporter for the ACLU of Michigan, formerly of the Metro Times, going to be talking about the impact of state-appointed emergency financial managers on our cities and educational systems. And Jefferson, thank you so much for doing those calls.
Al Beck will be in.
Al Beck,
at 2
look out. You know what that means. You're going to rock.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we'll do it next week.
Thanks for listening to Night Call on 101 The Riff. We'll return with more Night Call right after this. Night Call. Night Call. Opening day rocks with The Riff at the Fillmore, March 31st. Doors open 7:30 a.m. with Dave and Chuck the Freak live until 10. Grab limited edition Riff opening day shirts and more while supplies last. Sponsored in part by Scores Detroit Gentlemen's Club. Score big at Scores Detroit. Details at WRIF.com. Everything that rocks on your smartphone. Download the 101 WRIF app for your iPhone or Android today. Brought to you in part by the Specs Howard School of Media Arts. Download from the App Store or Google Play Store now. Or click the link at WRIF.com. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. You could change.
Jet off to the UK to see Korn perform at the Brixton Academy, May 2nd. Get all the details online at WRIF.com.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I used to, well, I can even name the bar, the Old Miami in downtown Detroit. A lot of great bands have played there in the past and continue to do so. Nice, vibrant part of the Detroit scene. But for a long time, it was primarily a vets bar, veterans from the Vietnam War. And one of the slogans they had on the war, on the wall, rather, was, "The war was wrong, not the warriors." These were men that came to oppose the war in which they fought, the Vietnam War. I think many of you, or at least some of you, may know of the Vietnam Veterans Against the War. Probably the most prominent member that is well known to all is Senator John Kerry, who threw his medals back at the White House in the Pentagon, that so disgusted were they with the war and its conduct. One of the things that one does not do publicly is to criticize the warriors, our troops, our boys. Maybe we can criticize George Bush or Richard Nixon or President Johnson, but we do not criticize our troops. That's sort of fundamental because ultimately they're doing their job. A book has come my way that's extraordinarily disturbing, and that has to do with the conduct of the war in Vietnam that was done by our troops. I was shocked to learn that there is in the Pentagon, there was a Vietnam War Crimes Working Group. This is absolutely extraordinary. The book is called Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam, and the author is Nick Terse. And Nick Terse is the author of The Complex. He's also the managing editor for TomDispatch.com, which I would highly recommend. He's a fellow at the Nation Institute, and his work has appeared in the Los Angeles Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, The Nation, lots of other publications as well. His investigations of American, get this phrase now, folks, war crimes in Vietnam has gained him a Rittenhour Prize for Repertorial Distinction, a Guggenheim Fellowship, and a fellowship at Harvard University's Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Study. We're reaching him at his home near New York City. Nick Terse, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm sure you probably agree with everything I said. One does not talk about American soldiers and war crimes. That's what they do. But tell us about the Rittenhour Prize, and I assume that was named after Ron Rittenhour, and his positioning in all of this. I think that will make a lot more sense to people.
Sure. You know, Ron Rittenhour was, he was a GI in Vietnam, and, you know, he went to war with a group of men. They all trained together in Hawaii before they went to Vietnam. They were in the 23rd Infantry Division. And along the way, the infantry unit that Ron was in was split up, and he went off to serve as a crewman on a helicopter. And the rest of the GIs that he's was trained with went to serve as regular line infantry in the Vietnamese countryside. And this was the unit that eventually went into the village of My Lai, and on March 16th, 1968, they carried out the most notorious American war crime of the war. They killed more than 500 civilians, women, children, and old men over the course of several hours at My Lai. And in the months afterwards, you know, these guys came in from the field, and Ron Rittenhour was back at base camp, and he began talking with his old friends. And one by one, they would each say to him something along the lines of, "Did you hear, you know, what we did in that village?" They called it Pinkville. And Ron said no, and they would fill him in on what they'd seen. And once Ron heard this, you know, he was really shocked at what happened, and he began collecting testimony, because he said that if he did nothing, he would be complicit with what they had done. He didn't think it was right, and he thought it was important that this be investigated and proper criminal action taken against those who are responsible. So when Ron came back to the United States, he began writing letters, and he sent registered letters to 30 Washington, D.C. power brokers, members of Congress, high-ranking members of the military, even to the White House. and an investigation started. And eventually this investigation tipped off the investigative reporter Seymour Hersh. People may know today, he still works at the New Yorker magazine. He's still breaking national security stories. But at the time, he was basically a unknown Pentagon reporter. And Cy Hersh and Ron Reinhauer together were able to blow the lid off the My Lai massacre. And about a year after the massacre had been committed, a year and a half, it finally hit the front pages of America's papers.
And it people were shocked. People said, this is not what the American troops do. This was, as it was called, bad apples. There was even a trial. Lieutenant Kelly and others were tried for it. So it was dealt with in the minds of many people. But please speak to that. But also, I'm just shocked to learn that the Pentagon actually had something called the Vietnam War Crimes Working Group. Well, kind of if you could weave maybe those answer to that in those elements in together.
Sure. Well, when the Pentagon began investigating the My Lai massacre, they put together a panel. Which, you know, the basic idea was that this panel would thoroughly investigate My Lai. It would show that the massacre at My Lai was an aberration, that it was carried out by, somehow a rogue unit, something like that. This was the thought. And they convened a panel under the direction of a general by the name of Pierce. So it was called the Pierce Panel. And what General Pierce found really... It caused a great stir at the Pentagon because during his investigation, which was astonishingly thorough, he found that there was another massacre committed on the same day as My Lai in a village called My Khe, not very far away, but it was carried out by an entirely different unit that had nothing to do with the operation going on at My Lai. I mean, they were complementary operations, but totally different troops involved. So this put the lie to the idea that My Lai was some sort of isolated incident. If two massacres could be going on in different places, but at the same time carried out by different troops, it really destroyed the Pentagon's narrative. And eventually the My Khe case was covered up. It was buried. All the charges in that were dropped, and the case sort of disappeared. At the same time, the military was really afraid that if this was the case, if they could look and at one discrete area of Vietnam and find two massacres on the same day, what else might be out there? So they created this secret Pentagon task force. It was run out of the Army Chief of Staff's office. It was General William Westmoreland, who just a couple years earlier had been the supreme commander in Vietnam, so he had a vested interest in finding out what other cases might bubble up. And this secret Pentagon task force tracked war crimes allegations. It kept tabs so the Army would never get caught flat-footed again like it did with My Lai, and whenever it could, it tamped down allegations so they didn't become public.
In your book, Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam, you say that there's little room for doubt, quote, that murder, torture, rape, abuse, forced displacement, home burning, specious arrest, and imprisonment without due process, close quote, were encouraged by body count-minded war managers and badly trained junior officers and abetted by General Westmoreland in his search and destroy strategy. This is hard for Americans to face. David Swanson has a website called War is a Crime, and I'm just reading James McPherson's Battle Cry of Freedom about the Civil War. And within that, troops on both sides, murdered, tortured, raped when they came into areas, abused people. And it strikes me that in many ways, this is what happens in all wars. You have young men who are under great stress, who just hate the enemy, who've inflicted injury and death upon their comrades, and they retaliate with no concern for the other, particularly in the case when we're fighting people of color. So someone might ask, this is all known, but isn't it like kind of saying Uncle Ralph is drooling at the Thanksgiving dinner? In other words, this is known, but this is something that we put our fingers in our ears and go, la, 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 la. You know, these are our boys. These are our troops. Why make all of this public, I guess, is the question that many people would ask.
Well, I do in the book, in Kill Anything That Moves, I do try to put everything into context, that basically the average American troops in Vietnam, infantrymen, were 18, 19, 20-year-old American boys. They were really put in untenable situations. It was an extremely harsh environment that they were in. They were tasked to fight an enemy they generally couldn't discern from the civilian population. So they were in it was very hard for them to figure out exactly what they were supposed to be doing. You can't remove all culpability from people. It's never under the laws of war acceptable to kill women and children in cold blood. But I try and show some nuance there and show exactly what American troops were faced with. And I think when people read my book, they'll find that a great deal of the onus is put on the American military, the command structure at the time. They didn't give these American troops much guidance. The laws of war training that they provided to them was exceptionally lackluster. This goes for the young officers that led the troops, and basically the U.S. military's command policies and its basic strategy and tactics during the war. That's what made it inevitable that large numbers of civilians would be killed. In my book, I try and tell a story that's punctuated by the records that show things like massacres and murder and rape and assault took place, but that what really caused Vietnamese civilian suffering were the deliberate U.S. policies, things like unrestrained bombing of the countryside and artillery shelling across wide swaths of rural Vietnam where most Vietnamese lived. This is how most Vietnamese were killed and wounded during the war. And, it isn't just a story of, small patrols carrying out massacres.
My guest is Nick Turse. That's T-U-R-S-E. You can go to nickturse.com, and there'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. The book is Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam, and talking about the horrendous acts against the civilian population carried out by American troops there. And if there are men, or probably mostly men, that were there, or anyone else would like to email me, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. calltalkyes@yahoo.com for any comments that you may have about this. You mentioned about the unrestricted bombing. Noam Chomsky, the famed linguist and social critic, said that when you ask Americans how many civilians died in Vietnam, we know exactly almost how many Americans died, but when you say how many Indochinese died, there's a blank, and sometimes people say, I don't know, 200,000, 300,000. And he says it would be like asking Germans how many Jews perished in the concentration camps, and them coming up with a figure like that, although there was many more in Nazi-occupied Germany. But how many civilians actually died as a result of the war?
Well, the best estimates that we have indicate about 2 million Vietnamese civilians died during the war, most of them in South Vietnam, which was America's Vietnamese ally during the war. So this was the quote-unquote friendly population.
Yeah.
And you add to that about 5.3 million civilian wounded if you use a very conservative method of estimation. Around 11 million Vietnamese were made refugees during the war, about 4 million exposed to toxic defoliants like Agent Orange. So you have suffering on an almost unimaginable scale.
And this was all created, folks, you may remember by now, this is common common coin, it was denied back then, that the pretext for the United States entering the Vietnam War in great numbers was a fabricated incident. So, but let's go on, Nick Terse, with your book, Kill Anything That Moves. Tell us about the Vietnam veterans that you approached. First, I'd like to know sort of the methodology. How did you, how were you even able to get a hold of men that had served there?
Well, when I came across those records in the National Archives, that was really my starting point. These records had the names of men who had served in the war, and then talked to Army criminal investigators about what they had seen. So that was a starting point for me. And from there, I went on and used other U.S. military records, and I ended up talking to well over 100 American veterans over the course of writing this book. And some of them I talked to on the phone, and some I just showed up on their doorstep. Some of them were named as perpetrators of crimes. Some were witnesses. One that really sticks out in my mind, who affected my life greatly, was Jamie Henry. And Jamie was a self-described hippie living in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury district prior to the war, but he was drafted. And he became a medic, and by all accounts, a very good one. He saved a lot of American lives, and was praised by a lot of his fellow troops. But he was also shocked by what he saw in Vietnam. On his first day in the field, he told me how he watched the point man of his patrol, the lead man, molest a young girl. And he said he thought to himself, my God, what's going on here? And over the ensuing weeks and months, he watched a litany of atrocities take place. He saw a young boy who was kicked in the stomach and then taken away and executed for no reason, an old man who was used for target practice, a prisoner who was thrown off a cliff, a man held down to be run over by an armored personnel carrier, basically a small tank. And, after he first spoke up about this brutality, his life was threatened in Vietnam. He was told to keep his mouth shut, and even his friends came up to him and said, "Listen, Doc," all medics were called Doc at the time, said, "Listen, Doc, we'll get in a firefight, and you'll get shot in the back, and it'll just be, called in as being shot by the enemy." Said, you really better be quiet. So, Jamie kept his mouth shut, but he continued to keep his eyes open, and he made a catalog of all these things. And, on February 8th, 1968, it's just about a month before the My Lai massacre, his unit went into a village, and his commanding officer ordered that the civilians there be rounded up. The day before, the unit had gotten into a horrific firefight, and he was angry, and a subordinate officer said, "Okay, sir, I've rounded up these people. What do you want me to do?" And his commanding officer issued the order, "Kill anything that moves."
That's the title from where your book comes from.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And and Jamie heard this over the radio, so he got up and he made his way over to where the people were. He wanted to intervene. He was trying to stop it, but by the time he got there, he said about five men around them opened up on full automatic with their M16 rifles and killed. It was 19 women and children.
Now, did you speak to any men who had actually participated in the war crimes? And if you're just joining us and don't like that phrase, war crimes, please know that a group was assembled by the Pentagon in the wake of the My Lai massacre that was called the Vietnam War Crimes Working Group. This is inside the Pentagon. There was knowledge of this, and there was concern about it. But did you speak with men who had actually committed the type of crimes that you detail in your book?
I did. I was in touch with a man who I found in the records had, just for an example, he had admitted to carrying out torture on enemy prisoners and detainees, and he subjected them to water torture, electrical torture, had beaten them with his fists, and I asked him about that, and he was completely unrepentant. He said that if he was faced with a Vietnam-type situation again, he would do the same thing, and he thought he had acted correctly. And there were other men that I talked to who who just they couldn't believe what their 19-year-old selves had done.
That's interesting, because what one, I mean, I'm trying to think back, pardon me, to when I was 19, and, you know, who was I then and who am I today? And were there any of the men that you spoke to that exhibited remorse?
Yes, certainly there were. There was one gentleman always sticks out in my mind. He told me, I was talking to him for a while. He was very jovial. Had a very infectious laugh, and he talked about the war and about, the stresses that he was under at the time. And then he told me about a fellow member of his unit, he said, who one day when they were going through a hamlet, they were doing what U.S. troops generally did, which was burn them down. They were setting houses on fire, and a woman ran out. She was grabbing on his arm and yelling, because her house was being burned down. And he said this G.I., pushed her away and then took the butt of his rifle and hit her square in the face. And as blood poured out of her face, he walked away laughing. And then, a minute or two later, he confessed to me. He said, that GI that I told you about, he said, that was me.
Oh.
And he said, I don't know how I did it. And he said, but I live with it every day. And he said, I can't believe that's how I acted, but that's how it was, and I feel sorry every day for that.
Well, Nick Terse, what does this all tell us? It tells us, of course, that war is in some ways almost romanticized, but we live in a militaristic society where our troops are greatly respected. I'm going to be curious. Your book has just been released, Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam. What is going to be the reaction? I suspect that in many quarters, people will say, even if this is the case, this shouldn't be something that is uttered publicly.
Yeah, I think that is a response from a lot of quarters. People generally don't, Americans don't want to hear these stories. They don't want to hear about, what American troops have done in the field. These aren't, it's not popular, and it's generally not pleasant to think about. But I think that, especially because we've been involved in serial wars, in Afghanistan and Iraq, and now these quasi-covert military actions in Pakistan and Yemen, I think it is important for Americans to get some sense of what war really is about. Now, a lot of veterans are reticent to talk about things that they've seen. While I don't think the scale of the carnage in America's current wars compares to what it was in Vietnam, we still know that large numbers of civilians are being killed and wounded. And I think it's important for Americans to remain cognizant of this.
I mentioned off the air before we began that some of the listenership here wasn't even born when the Vietnam War was raging. And looking at your photo, I suspect you weren't either. What drove you to this in the first place, and what do you take away from it, and what should we take away from it all?
Well, as I mentioned, I really stumbled upon these records. I was at the time researching post-traumatic stress among U.S. Vietnam veterans. So I was learning about the war, and then I found the records and realized they weren't anywhere in the literature. And I thought it was important for Americans to know. So I kind of set out on a journey, and it took me into unexpected places, and the story that I wanted to tell kind of evolved as I went, and especially as I talked to Vietnamese witnesses and survivors of the war on the ground in Vietnam. And it really gave me a better idea of what war's really about. I don't think I had a clear idea, even after I wrote, a 1,000-page dissertation from the records, a doctoral dissertation on these records. But I really don't think I knew about the war until I first went to Vietnam to try and track down witnesses and survivors from these cases. And when I did, what the Vietnamese told me about was not the one spasm of violence that I was there to look into, but what it was like to live for 10 years under bombs and shells and helicopter gunships, and how they negotiated their lives, just figuring out when to come out of a bunker and when not to, when it was safe to go out and farm and when not to. These are things that I didn't understand until I got there, and I think that it's incumbent for Americans to understand if we're going to send our brothers and sisters and sons and daughters to war, that what that war means for people abroad.
Yeah. And one thing to look at, I mentioned earlier that the original buildup, the huge buildup in Vietnam, came about as around a falsified incident. So it was true in the Mexican War and the Spanish-American War and the First World War and the Iraq War. We just got to be real careful about this, because most of these wars never had to be fought, and these kind of horrors, both perpetrated and experienced, never had to occur. Well, Nick Turse, I want to thank you for being a guest on my show. The book is Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam. My guest has been Nick Turse, T-U-R-S-E. You can go to nickturse.com or my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. There'll be a link to the book. I know this is controversial. This book has just come out, so I think we're going to start seeing some real waves about this. I'm very curious as to how this is all going to play. If you'd like to write me your opinion, you can write at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Nick Turse, thanks for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks very much for having me on, Peter.
You're listening to the award-winning Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be back with another guest in just a moment. Night Call. Night Call. Join the Riff Zone Meltdown this Thursday night starting at 8 p.m. at the Token Lounge on Joy Road, just east of Middlebelt in Westland, as the Riff welcomes Saliva live in concert. Tickets are on sale at tokenlounge.com.
Now your whole family gets even more for less. Sign up for the More Everything plan from Verizon and share an amazing 10 gigabytes of data for just $45 monthly access per line when you sign up for 4 lines with Verizon Edge. Click the banner to learn more. Activation, early termination, and other fees may apply.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
License and registration.
But I'm walking.
Do you want to upset an officer of the law?
No, sir.
Good. I pulled you over today for littering.
I didn't litter.
Wow. That's what they all say. Unfortunately, I saw you drop a pair of thunder thighs a few blocks back. Probably happened as you were biting into that apple you're holding.
How'd you know they're my thunder thighs?
Well, my young friend, I'd like to say 2 years in the police academy helped figure it out, but between us, it was smallstep.gov.
Smallstep.gov?
Yep-a-rooney. It's this site with tons of easy ways to lose weight. Some steps are so easy, people don't realize they're doing them. Like you taking small step number 83, snack on fruits. Go to smallstep.gov, you'll see. You can drive off now.
I'm still walking.
Take a small step to get healthy at smallstep.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Night Call is back on 101 WRIF. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, it's getting to be a lost art, is investigative reporting. For, I don't know, years and years and years the newspapers were just sort of the mouthpiece of the editors and usually conservative and the advertisers. But beginning in the 1960s, it began this wave that harkened back to an earlier part of the century, muckraking, finding out what the advertisers and the politicians were actually up to. And a lot of careers were ended, a lot of money saved, a lot of corruption exposed. But it's a lost, and I don't know, we'll ask our guests. I think it's almost a dying art. He's Kurt Guyette. He's an investigative reporter for the ACLU of Michigan, the American Civil Liberties Union, and he's the former news editor of the Metro Times, old friend as well. Kurt Guyette, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
It's very nice to be here, Peter.
Yeah, you know, it's no one thinks of the ACLU of Michigan of having an investigative reporter, but before we even get to that, maybe you could comment on what I said. Is there still important investigative reporting going on, or is it dying?
Well, I think the answer is both. There is still good investigative reporting going on in a number of places, but also, especially at the mainstream daily papers, it is becoming less and less of a factor. Daily papers, newspapers of all sorts are really struggling to deal with the internet age and what that's done to their advertising revenue. And when they make cutbacks, one of the most expensive aspects of journalism is investigative reporting, because it takes a lot of time to do, and you're not churning out copy and sort of feeding the beast every day. And so when they're looking to cut, that's often one of the places that they do cut, which is unfortunate, both in terms of the effects it has on society, because it's very important that the press be vibrant and play a watchdog role for democracy to work. And I also think it's short-sighted on the part of publishers. When you look at stories, when you get a good investigative piece, people go to it. Look at the business the dailies were doing when they were breaking Kwame stuff all the time. So it's important in a lot of ways, and it is fading, which is one of the reasons I think why the ACLU of Michigan got a grant from the Ford Foundation to hire me to continue doing that kind of work.
I'm going to hear about this. Let's, though, stick just for a minute with the newspapers and lack of investigative. I'm saying that word a little different than you, but it doesn't matter. Kurt Guyette is my guest. He's an investigative reporter with the ACLU of Michigan, formerly with the Metro Times, where he was the news editor. Staffs are cut on print newspapers, saying, look, we just can't afford it. You were indicating that it takes a lot of time. When you worked with the Metro Times, you broke a lot of very important stories. Could you give us just an example of, say, maybe story that you're the most proud of? You used to do that almost every week in news hits.
News hits,
yeah. But there were some also larger feature pieces that you did. Give us an idea of one of them, and you say it takes a while, so you're not, although you were creating copy as you went along, but what it all took and how much effort goes into it.
Well, one of the stories that we did a lot on had to do with the Detroit incinerator, and that was an issue I covered for quite a while, and the whole, everything going on with the incinerator in terms of why the city got roped into this very bad financial deal where they sent their trash to a private company that would burn it and to produce electricity and to produce steam, which was then sold to another company, which was then sold back to the city to heat and cool buildings through their underground steam loop. And when it would have been cheaper to just send it to a landfill and environmentally better than burning.
This is amazing that, when we talk about how bad landfills are, yet this huge incinerator that is just east of I-94 around the Wayne State area was just a boondoggle. And interestingly, and I know, Kurt Guyette, you covered this as well, what the opposition to citing this and then what it did while it burned, the opposition was absolutely 100% correct on every aspect of it, financially, environmentally, even politically.
Absolutely. And that aspect of it occurred before I arrived in Detroit. I think that was the early 90s when their original opposition to it formed. But I did a lot of research and talked to those people who were involved in that issue when I was writing about it subsequently. And they were largely opposed to it on environmental issues, but they were making the point that it was going to be an economic
disaster
as well. Yeah. And you're right. They were absolutely right in what they were predicting. And it cost Detroit taxpayers an incredible amount of money and is still costing them money.
Yeah, and in one piece of irony, at one point it was owned by Philip Morris.
Yes.
Which I thought, but one of the things that people that are being investigated say, whether it's politicians or corporations, somebody like Kurt Guyette, he's got an axe to grind. He's coming in with it. He wants to nail the Detroit incinerator and the Detroit incinerator authority. So in that sense, it has this inappropriateness to it. How do you respond to charges like that?
Facts don't lie. You know, you develop evidence and you lay it out, present both sides of the story. But, you know, if you spend 2-3 months investigating something, you're going to have an opinion on it. That was one of the nice things about working for the alternative press. When I first went to work for the alternative press, I had worked at smaller mainstream daily papers prior to that. Studied journalism in college, and you get this mantra of objectivity beat into your head. And I was lucky enough at one point to discover the alternative press and go to work for an alternative paper in Sacramento, California. And one of the first things the editor there told me was, I don't expect you to be objective. What I want you to be is fair. And there's a difference. This, a lot of times you read stories, let's say about climate change, where they take and give equal weight to both sides of the argument, even though one side, the preponderance of evidence is so much further on one side.
Like global warming or in evolution. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. But yet they'll do a story in order to achieve objectivity, quote, balance. They'll give equal weight to both sides. And, you know, that's once I got into the alternative press, it was liberating to be able to approach things differently. But it's also very important to be fair, because if you are not fair, you're not going to have credibility. And if you don't have credibility, then you really don't have much of a career in journalism.
And it's not like the editors at the Metro Times would say, yeah, let's just have these hit pieces without any facts or inserting your opinion. I know the first piece that I wrote for the Metro Times, I wrote about 75 articles, particularly, I think, all during the 1990s, and I turned in a piece on Fermi 2, the nuclear power plant in Monroe, that had just shut down. So it was like a diatribe against nuclear power. And they said, no. Oh, no, you can't. This is an editorial. You have to, that old speaking about mantras, you have to show, not tell. Mm-hmm. And if you can get a statement from an anti-nuclear activist, good. But I want one from Detroit Edison as well, which I did. But I had the same feeling that when it was done and when it was accepted and it was printed, it was, I noticed you didn't put balanced on the end of fair, but fair and balanced, but I thought still made the point that I wanted to make, that that nuclear power is dangerous and expensive. So you can do that. Kurt Guyette is my guest. He's an investigative reporter with the ACLU of Michigan, former news editor of the Metro Times. And let's turn to what a role. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine when I saw you recently and you told me what you were doing. The ACLU of Michigan lawyers taking civil liberties cases. How did Kurt Guyette get to be an investigative reporter?
They applied for a grant from the Ford Foundation in order to hire somebody to specifically investigate issues of around emergency managers and open government.
Oh, what we're looking at in Detroit, yeah.
Well, Detroit, but it's all over this state. It's a very, very hot issue up in Flint right now. Pontiac is coming out from under emergency management. They're school districts, Detroit Public Schools, has been under state control for most of the last 12 years and is under emergency management right now. And then as a result of emergency management, there is kind of a one step further removed from public oversight, which is the Education Achievement Authority, which is a very, very controversial effort that's going on in Detroit right now to deal with, quote, low-performing schools within the system. So there's a lot going on. It's not just focused on Detroit, although for the time being, because of the bankruptcy, Detroit is getting a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm. Aren't they looking at Lincoln Park now, aren't they? Yeah. So is this just a one-shot deal when everything, when this is resolved, if it's ever resolved for Detroit and the other cities that have a emergency managers, is that the end of it, or
it's a 2-year grant?
Okay.
If I do a good job, there's a possibility it could be renewed. But for right now, it's a wonderful, wonderful experience and kind of a dream job.
I've always thought of you as very modest, so this will probably embarrass you. But I always think of you as one of the better or best reporters in Detroit. On the other hand, there's been so much done on the emergency manager, his role, whether it's Democratic or not, the bankruptcy suit. As deeply as Kurt Guyette can dig, is there stuff here that hasn't been brought up? We have a mutual acquaintance or even friend of Tom Stevens who does incredible work and, I mean, who overwhelms us daily with information, right? What's there that hasn't already been brought up, or is that a worrisome point for you?
In some ways, it's a challenge because you're right. There is so much out there and continues to be out there. But also, there is definitely opportunity. I've been spending a lot of time past month going through bankruptcy transcripts, which reporters at dailies don't have time to do. And so I'm working on a story right now looking at the history of the emergency management in Detroit and how it came back, how it came to be. And a lot of information has come out during the bankruptcy. And I have a chance to put it together in a way that people at the dailies don't necessarily have the time to do. That's one of the nice things about my job is I do have the luxury to put some time into an issue and maybe connect dots that weren't necessarily connected. Or maybe it is that when Kevin Orr was on the stand for the bankruptcy trial, or the governor was, there's a lot of information. And maybe in the middle of that story, there's one really good nugget that is illuminating that doesn't really get the attention that it deserves and that is part of a bigger picture, and trying to put that bigger picture together is something I'm working on right now.
You write in a very compelling style. Does this have those elements? I mean, because you're saying court transcripts, and you know, I mean, I have confidence in you. So,
well, thanks, Peter.
But you know, on the face of it, someone might say, "Well, you know."
Well, look at all the courtroom dramas that are movies. I mean, courtroom stuff can be pretty compelling. You know, it's all because it'll be sleep inducing. A lot of times, it's like that effect in church. I don't know if it's because the oxygen gets shut, taken out of a room or something. But sitting in a courtroom for a couple hours and you know, I've seen people in the jury nod off, fellow reporters nod off. So it can be a lot of dull stuff, but, you know, maybe it's what they say about, you know, being a pilot. It's hours of monotony and, you know, seconds of sure terror there. But there are some really startling moments that, so you put those together and hopefully it's a story people will want to read.
You know, you mentioned the Kwame Kilpatrick situation and how that commanded the attention of so many people and how that was ferreted out by so many reporters. I mean, certainly there was this element of fascination with it because of the racial element, but just that the man was so spectacularly corrupt and so abysmally stupid. I mean, who leaves all their text messages on a system that retains them, you know, like forever? So the guy gets caught.
But that almost didn't come out. You know, it was the Free Press working very hard and doing very good investigative work that helped bring those texts to messages to light, but that almost didn't come out. If it wasn't for them, it might not have.
And think about all this Chris Christie stuff
as
well.
Sure.
So this, I think there's, you know, when we see that, what we always suspect about politicians, that they're venal and corrupt. I mean, they're not all, and hopefully it's a minority of them, but they seem to always be present. It's interesting when I talk to people about the emergency management situation in Detroit, they don't have a lot of opinions. In other words, most people think the city was really screwed up. I mean, their narrative is so far off. You know, the reason that it went bankrupt is because Kwame Kilpatrick stole millions, which is, that doesn't even have an element of truth in it. I mean, I don't think he stole anything from the city, did he? He was just getting kind of, I mean, bad contracts.
Right. So,
but the Detroit is not in the situation it's in because of Kwame Kilpatrick. But whatever, people think it's in bad shape, and it should be put in good shape. So if, you know, if dad can't keep his family's, you know, affairs, financial affairs in order, well, then maybe he needs a credit counselor. So that's what it appears to look like to a lot of people, and things all of a sudden are starting to look good for the city of Detroit. So I don't, I mean, I know that there's great, deep opposition to this, but I would say that that most people's interest in it is, you know, they always talk about a mile wide and an inch deep, but in a lot of ways it's, I think it's both, you know, an inch wide and an inch deep. Just, you know, the people solve Detroit's problems. But what's there that, that could command this this intense scrutiny that you're bringing to it?
Well, first of all, I think you're absolutely right that there are a lot of people who just felt that the status quo was so terrible and so unacceptable that they were willing to try just about anything in order to see things turn around. The other side of it is, whether you believe democracy is a good system of government and that applies to everybody, or if you happen to be in a city that is predominantly African American and predominantly poor, well, you know what? You don't necessarily get to enjoy democracy anymore because you're, you know, the thinking, I think, in the suburbs, you know, the phrase, oh, those people just can't run things themselves.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there's this, racism is definitely a big part of this issue. The, almost all of the places that where an emergency manager has been imposed have been minority-majority cities, And they've also been two or three times the poverty rate that are in the rest of the state. So, you know, these, so if you're poor, if you're black, should you be put in a position where you don't have elected officials with any power? When, as you said, Detroit's problems were not due to Kwame Kilpatrick. Detroit's problems go back. There's a historical context to it, the white flight that was subsidized, the creating a downward spiral as property tax rates decrease, services decrease. As services decrease, more people leave, and you still have the same amount of infrastructure to maintain. This has been a problem long in the making, and then was really accelerated with the financial collapse and the foreclosure crisis, which was also largely a racist issue, because these predatory lenders were targeting minority communities. And the foreclosure crisis greatly accelerated the exodus from Detroit. And so these are all factors that really don't get talked about very much at all.
Mm-hmm. And of course, all those predatory lenders were punished. Anyway, we're running out of time with Kurt Guyatt. He's an investigative reporter for the ACLU of Michigan. ACLU, which winds up as sort of a proper noun, stands for the American Civil Liberties Union, this the Michigan chapter. What's the civil liberties issue here? Is it that now Detroit is run by a dictator?
Well, definitely the fact that voting rights are being impaired. I don't know if there's a more basic civil liberty in a democracy
Sure.
than the right to elect representatives and have them look out for your interests. And if they don't look out for your interests, then you remove them, vote them out of office.
You know, and what you're doing, this is going to appear in the Metro Times soon? Yeah, is there?
Yes, in the first week of April. Although I am writing a blog regularly, it's appearing on the ACLUMich.org website. Although probably this week we're going to be launching a separate website that's just going to be dedicated to this issue and the work that I'm doing. I've been writing about things going on in Flint and with the schools, and there's no shortage of things to write about.
All right. Well, I'll put a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. It's ACLUMICH.org, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I was thinking, too, that it's so good that there's an outlet for your writing, the Metro Times. And yet I was, all of a sudden, I'm blocking on that conservative think tank up in
Mackinac Center.
The Mackinac Center. What they do is they produce editorials, articles, all background information, all based on a conservative industrialist, pro-industrialist, pro-corporate agenda. Is the ACLU attempting to, I mean, this would seem to work, but boy, they get daily papers and weekly papers all over Michigan. Is there a hope that maybe this could counter that?
I don't know if we're looking to counter it, but certainly one of the challenges of my job is to find outlets for the work I produce. One of the things that's happened is that the Michigan Citizen has been running a column that I've been doing for them that's based off of stuff I've been writing for the blog. And then the other thing is appearing on shows like this. You know, there's lots of different ways to get information out now. And the challenge is to produce stuff that people are going to want to talk about, that they think is interesting enough to want to amplify. That's been my thinking going into this all along. If I do good work, then there's going to be outlets that appear.
Yeah, Kurt mentioned the Michigan Citizen, which I suspect probably the vast majority of the audience said, what? That's a newspaper. It's a weekly. It's fairly incredible, and it's a good source. Well, we are out of time with Kurt Guyatt. He's an investigative reporter with the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan. And he's writing about the emergency financial manager situation in Detroit and around the state. You can pick up his work at ACLUMISH.org. Also on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Kurt Guyette, thanks for being on the broadcast.
My pleasure, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or sponsors of WRIF Radio or of its parent company, Greater Media Incorporated. Stay tuned. There's more rock coming right up on 101 WRIF, everything that rocks. Night Call. Night Call. The big day is almost here. Baseball opening day, Monday, March 31st. Plan on heading downtown for all of the opening day festivities, but don't want to deal with the hassle of driving or parking? Crosstown Limos has you covered. Reserve a luxury car, limo, or party bus from Crosstown Limos for just $101 with promo code WRIF. Go right now to crosstownlimos.com or call 734-926-LIMO. That's 734-926-LIMO for Crosstown Limos.
During these tough economic times when many families are living paycheck to paycheck, it can be easy to lose sight of the importance of saving for the future. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling wants you to know there are some simple steps you can take to set aside dollars each month for retirement, college tuition, or unexpected expenses that could come your way. Most important is to review all your expenses and establish a monthly budget. Then examine every spending category and cut 10% from each. You can't reduce fixed expenses like rent or mortgage or a car payment, but you can easily cut back in many other areas like entertainment or using mass transit when possible instead of driving. And take a look at trying to bundle services such as your cell phone, land phone, cable TV, and internet service. For more tips and to speak with a certified credit counselor who can start you on the right track, call the NFCC at 800-388-2227 or visit debtadvice.org. This has been a public service message from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
When I grow up, I want to be a bike that races around the country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I want to be a rocking chair on a sunny porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
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 When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into 1 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
Oh, my God!
Get all of Dave and Chuck the Freak's best moments delivered right to your computer or mobile device. Brought to you by the Specs Howard School of Media Arts. Subscribe today at WRIF.com.